Anthony, are the phones still open?
Oh, I know.
Okay, we believe Christine had to drop out. Is Lorian still on the phone?
Yes, I'm still here.
Okay, thank you. Okay, the next measure is 1667, pediatric ESRD patients receiving dialysis, hemoglobin level less than 10, presenting Rick, Dr. Castle.
Okay. So this measure is evaluating the percentage of calendar months within a 12-month period during which patients age 17 years and younger with a diagnosis of ESRD receiving hemodialysis or peritoneal dialysis have a hemoglobin level less than 10 grams per deciliter. There's a number of exclusions here, same as were seen in 1660 measure, except in addition, hypersplenism was added, as well as postoperative bleeding, active bloodstream, or peritoneal infection. It's an outcome measure. And the data source is the same as 1660. It's not paired, nor is it a composite. Just as a review, we heard before that CMS had withdrew the pediatric facility level measure of a hemoglobin less than 10, recommended in the recent project due to the FDA announcements. The evidence provided for reliability and validity of this measure appear to be the same as that was presented for the adult measure 1660. But this is, I'm going to try and review some unique criteria and evidence-based medicine for pediatrics that show this is different than what we just heard in 1660. Can I proceed to give a little review?
Well, why don't we start with the TANE 1A? So we'll go through like we did before and start with IMPACT, 1A, high impact, and Lauren's got the preliminary results up, and I don't know if you, Rick, if you want to say anything about that, or basically, go ahead.
So we, the group
appeared to be in uniform agreement with three high and two moderate.
So did any of the other reviewers or committee members want to make any comments about impact, or are you ready to vote on that? Okay, let's go ahead. Impact for this measure, high, moderate, low, insufficient. Go ahead.
And Lorian, impact?
Moderate.
Thank you.
I think we're missing a couple, so let's, I think 18 will be it. Okay, all rated high or moderate, 8 high, 10 moderate.
Okay, so now let's go on to opportunity for improvement or performance gap.
For our opportunity for improvement performance gap, we see we have almost uniformly 4 moderates and 1 insufficient.
Just Rick, could you give us the data for that? For the performance gap?
Surely. We have evidence from 2 major sources. One is a review from the children in the North American Pediatric Renal Transplant Cooperative Study Base. From 1992 to 2001 with hemoglobins less than 9.9 grams per deciliter compared to those with hemoglobin values greater than 9.9 grams per deciliter. And this showed a elevated risk for mortality and greater risk for hospitalization in the groups that had the lower hemoglobin levels. In addition, a more recent report from the NAPRTX looked at over 2,779 patients ages 2 years and older with CKD stages 2 to 4, 5, found the prevalence of anemia in this group as defined as a hematocrit less than 33%, had increased significantly between stages 2 to stage 5. So anemic children were also 55% more likely to be hospitalized when compared to non-anemic children with CKD. That's a more recent report.
So, right, I appreciate those correlations, but I wonder about the performance gap. Do we know how many patients, in fact, don't achieve the level that is stated on this measure?
Lauren, you want to pull up 1B, what they presented?
This is adult.
That's adult data.
Data for children for the performance gap, is that what you're saying?
That's the older data, nothing new exists.
No, I understand. So for performance gap, we don't have any data, correct?
Right.
Okay, thanks.
Wait, okay. Measure developer. It's in 1B2 of your forms. The gap in care is shown by the PQRS data in 2008. 36.51% of patients reported on did not meet the measure.
That's pediatric patients?
It looks identical to the adult data.
Right. That's the question.
That's a good question. I don't know that.
It's not pediatric patients.
Yeah. This is the adult data.
Yeah. So let's just be clear. For this pediatric measure,
right.
We don't have any performance gap data.
Right. Okay. And I guess the question is anyone on the committee aware of existing data on performance gap for pediatric patients?
We don't have data on the performance gap. We have data, some data that recent publications showing some of the adverse outcomes of anemia in this population.
Right. Okay, we'll get to that with evidence. So, okay, so let's... I guess go ahead and vote on this. Performance gap would be, and before we go, well, let's go ahead and vote on this.
Can I just ask, do we know why we don't have performance gap data? Is it not being collected, or do we just not have it, or?
Right, because this doesn't have to be from the measure as specified. It can be from the literature, from prior studies about what percentage of kids have hemoglobins below 10? There's nothing like that in the literature? Anyone?
We don't have any review of any recent update of that other than what I've presented before. It's lacking.
Well, I mean, there is data in the literature to suggest that there is a proportion of children who have hemoglobins less than 10 that I think exceeds the adult number from my recollection of that. I can check to see if I actually have something here.
Can I ask just maybe it's a silly question, reflects my ignorance about this, but as we're thinking about the importance, the impact of this measure and other pediatric measures, how many kids are on hemodialysis in the United States?
We're upwards about 2,500 to 3,000 total, maybe a little more than that.
Around 2,500, yeah.
We do have data, we do have recent data that came out of a chronic kidney disease in children's study showing that over 40% of children with stage 2 to 4 CKD in North America are anemic, but that didn't define the level of hemoglobin below, the percentage of them that have hemoglobin below 10.
And I do recall from last time that Barbara had said, I think, that they mostly get dialyzed in specialty centers, that they're very concentrated.
That's correct, especially children who are getting hemodialysis, yes, and younger children. Yeah.
Okay, any other discussion about opportunity for improvement or performance gap? Any other information anyone wants to share? Okay, so let's go ahead and vote. High, moderate, low, insufficient. And Lorian, performance gap? I'm sorry, what was that?
Insufficient.
Thank you.
20? Yeah. Okay, 9 voted moderate, 11 said insufficient.
Okay, let's go on then to evidence, and this is not a health outcome, so we'll go on, it's an intermediate clinical outcome, and we'll be talking about the quantity, quality, and consistency of the evidence. And I think we need to talk about this in light of our prior discussion about the evidence. And I think, Rick, you think that there's a difference for pediatric. And one other context is this committee did recommend a similar measure for facilities last time, but CMS withdrew that measure. Okay, Rick.
For quality of body of evidence, the determination of hemoglobin targets in pediatric patients really resists definitive recommendations. The quality of life is important, obviously, to the development of the child and the family, and this leads urgency to the consideration of higher hemoglobin thresholds. Age-specific variation, also in normal hemoglobin levels, introduces further uncertainty, and given the metabolic growth and needs, and psychosocial differences between children and adults, we need to rely particularly uniquely on pediatric data. There's been a couple of studies that should be updated. A recent study in 2006, randomized controlled trial by Amaral, did show evidence for the benefit of treatment of anemia with ESA versus placebo, such that hemoglobin levels greater than 10 grams per cent in children were associated with a partial correction of an elevated cardiac index by 6 months of therapy and a reduction in left ventricular mass by 12 months. A second study by Garrison in 2004 looked at 105 pediatric hemodialysis patients and found that those who had hemoglobin levels less than 10 grams per cent were associated with poor quality of life evaluations and poor performance, both physically and in school. So we have two recent studies that would suggest that treating the anemia is very important. And finally, just as an update as what was mentioned before, we have so little data in pediatric CKD and ESKD that a nomination application to the Best Pharmaceutical and Children's Act was put in place this winter and received was prioritized by the BPCA and the NICHD for the 2012 priorities for studies in pediatrics. So it received one of the several priority scores to have further research done on this important issue, including targets of the ESA treatment.
Is it fair to say, though, the body, and this is one of the, kind of comes up again and again, the body of evidence may strongly support the importance of treating and that patients can improve if addressed in some in some outcomes, but it doesn't, there's nothing, just as in performance scale, there's nothing really tied to the frequency of measuring the hemoglobin.
This is about less than 10.
Oh, this is less than 10? I'm sorry, okay. So let me withdraw my question and take another comment. Alan?
I'm Mike and Rick, I'm just interested in your opinion about the quality of those two studies. We haven't had a chance to review them, but they both specifically address the hemoglobin target that we're talking about here with specific outcomes that are more pertinent to children than to adults. So can you give us your assessment of the quality of those two studies?
Sure. So the Amaral study that Rick alluded to looked at almost 700 kids, and it used clinical performance measure project data linked with USRDS hospitalization and mortality records. And it really did show that in terms of mortality, there's like a 70% difference if your hemoglobin was less than 10 versus greater than 10. There's also significant difference in rates of hospitalization as well. So, and I think that is very, very, you know, for pediatric world where we have small numbers and we're stuck with, you know, very limited data, that for us is very strong data to support deleterious consequences of hemoglobin less than 10. In addition to that, as Rick alluded to, there's smaller studies showing improvement in measures of cardiac health as your hemoglobin goes greater than 10 as well. And then there is data from a cohort of about 150 or 160 kids looking at a validated measure of quality of life and looking at how anemia negatively impacts health-related quality of life. And especially measures that in children are important in terms of physical development, cognitive development, school attendance, school performance, as well as social interactions with family and friends as well. Again, showing that as you become more anemic, you have a much poorer quality of life.
What is the pediatric nephrology world take on, we're led astray in the adult patient world by retrospective observational studies. So what is the thought amongst pediatric nephrologists about what we found to be this discordance between prospective and retrospective studies? And you think that applies to kids? Just curious as to, because a lot of this is going to be guided by this one study probably.
We have a very successful prospective evaluation going on, a longitudinal cohort study. It's not a treatment study, but it's a longitudinal cohort study, ongoing assessment now into its own third round of funding. It's similar to the CRIC study, and we're looking at children not on dialysis, but stage 2 to 4, and then as they transition to dialysis, they're in another study. But that has yielded very new and provocative information about the factors that are unique to pediatrics in CKD. We have found that 40-odd percent of them are anemic. Another 40% have hypertension that is masked hypertension in that population. They have normal blood pressures in the clinic, and on 24-hour inventory, they were abnormal. And those 40% that had masked hypertension, a significant number had LVH. So we're learning things. And as far as the anemia is concerned, in that study, it's begging a trial to determine why there's such a high percentage of anemia in children. Again, you have the confounding factors of growth, age-related differences in hemoglobin have been shown in the normal population. When you have impairment of growth in CKD, it's a whole host of other factors, nutritional, hormonal, that are working. And then the microinflammation that many of these children have demonstrated, again, in early stages. So I think we have a lot of room to move ahead with the appropriate anemia management. And I don't believe that we're facing the same issues that we're seeing in the adult studies looking at excess hemoglobin targets. It's inadequate hemoglobin targets for the child.
A lot of nodding going on, so I think we're ready to...
So would you just clarify, though, I know in the submission it mentioned that the recommendation is still considered opinion-based, expert opinion-based?
Yes, we don't have the trial to define it.
Okay. All right.
These are retrospective. What you're talking about, these data are what you think of as well-done observational retrospective studies. So that's why you're calling it opinion-based.
That's right. And Michael said that one of the studies was very well planned. Okay.
Are you sure you'd call it opinion-based then? Because you're saying there's a lot of evidence and well-done studies. They're not all clinical trials, but that's not the only thing.
It's evidence-based.
It's evidence-based.
I was just referring to the submission form talked about expert opinion-based, so that's a question for you all. Okay. So are any more discussion about the evidence that does or does not exist for the less than 10 target? Okay. So we'll first rate quantity, high, moderate, low, insufficient.
And Lorian, quantity? Lorian?
It's moderate. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you now. Thank you.
Okay, we're up to 19. That sounds about right. So you have 20.
Okay.
Okay, great. That's got to be it. All right, 17 moderate, 1 high, 3 low, 4, 1 insufficient. Let me do it again. 1 high, 17 moderate, 1 low, 1 insufficient.
Okay.
Okay, so we can go on to the quality.
All right. Quality rated on high, moderate, low, insufficient.
Go ahead and start that.
And Lorian, quality?
Low.
Everyone voted that's going to vote?
Okay.
19? Okay. We have 11 voting moderate, 7 voting low. And finally, consistency. 1 high, 2 moderate, 3 low, 4 insufficient.
Lorian?
Moderate.
Thank you.
Okay. 1, I'm sorry. 2 voted high, 16 moderate, 2 insufficient.
Okay.
So if we go with the majority, we
would pass evidence.
Pass evidence.
And just we'll go back and check. Impact was high, was passed, and so was.
The performance was judged. Yes. Performance gap was not demonstrated.
Right, performance gap was not demonstrated. So technically, that would not meet our importance criterion. So we'll have a discussion here whether that. I think the importance or the opportunity for improvement reflected what was available to you. I guess the question is whether, technically this measure would stop here by not meeting that. So I'm not asking you to change your vote, but if there's some rationale for moving forward.
Well, if I can, as a non-pediatrician, it seems inconceivable to me that there is not a performance gap here. There is for adults. There has to be a substantial performance gap, even though there's no evidence for that. I think we should move forward despite lack of a performance gap evidence.
I would agree. And it sounds like, well, it's not in the submission, that the literature has shown that there are a substantial amount of kids who have hemoglobins under 10. So even though, and one would assume then there are some that have hemoglobins over 10. Therefore, there is a performance gap.
Yeah.
Also, that'll be the first job when they get the metric is to find out if it's being done or not.
So we could ask PCPI to maybe provide us with some information from the literature, like Rick mentioned, that shows what percentage of pediatric patients are anemic. As Alan said, there's probably something that you could do. Okay. All right. So any objections?
Any objections?
Continuing?
We're all comfortable with that? Okay.
All right.
Can I just ask one question? I'm sorry. Just things pop into my head. In terms of the pediatric world for these patients, are there patients who would be excluded from this, who would be under the care of a pediatric nephrologist but are above the age of 17, that we should just think about whether there ought to be some, I don't know whether you can do it, a revision in the age? Because really what you want to do is capture all of your patients, all of the patients who are under the care of a pediatric nephrologist who are on dialysis, regardless of age, I would think.
We all follow, depending on the institution and state, patients who are in the transition zone getting them ready to go to you folks. In my center, we follow them until they turn 22. And half our patients are over 17, where I am, in the inner city, which is maybe a little unique. I don't know. Michael, you want to comment on that too?
I mean, I think Barbara alluded to this earlier in her comments as well, that, you know, many of us have a proportion of our patients who are later adolescents and young adults, and that some of the data that exists under the rubric of pediatric data includes older adolescents within that. So some of the health quality outcomes data, as well as some of the data looking in terms of detrimental physical effects of anemia, also included a fair number of older adolescents.
I just want to mention, as far as this Best Pharmaceutical and Children's Act, which is an act of Congress supporting research in pediatrics, the fact that this concept of anemia in CKD was chosen as a priority for 2012 was based on performance data, that there's a gap in our knowledge for dosing, treatment, target values, prevention of the morbidities. So I don't know what message I didn't get across, but this was chosen amongst five or six areas of research from the NICHD for next year.
Okay, so
go
we can move on
to reliability.
Karen, I wonder, given this additional discussion, is it worth taking, should we take another vote on the performance gap? Or
maybe you were out. We offered anybody a chance to put up a counter argument or object, and nobody
okay.
did. So we decided to move on.
Just wondering if, for the record, if we wanted to re-vote on the performance gap information. We were voting on what's
the It doesn't change the fact there isn't, there's insufficient evidence, but that doesn't mean there isn't one.
Right.
And so we're going to go with common sense. In these things, we believe there is a gap, and we think the importance is such and so on that the committee's decided to let it ride for now and move on to the next criteria. So,
Rick, reliability.
Rick, would you like to?
For reliability, we have, we can see the breakdown there.
So there was some difference of opinion. How was reliability tested? Was reliability tested for the pediatric measure, or is this also adult the same?
This is adult, but the testing methodology we feel should hold true for a pediatric population.
Other reviewers for this measure, any comments about reliability?
I just quickly, you know, I don't personally see any reason why reliability testing for the adults should be any different than for the kids. So in the specifications measures, I would suggest that we can accept the testing that's been done for adults.
Okay. All right. Ready to vote on reliability?
This is Lorian. Can I just mention the same concerns as before, that in the e-specification, there's a lot of unusual data elements that may not be relevant to measure. And I think some simple mistakes like patient age 18 and older in the flow sheet, et cetera. So that's in the attachment.
Okay. Does the steering committee want to look at that? Do you want to take the same approach as last time? Is it kind of throughout again, Lorian, or is it?
Yeah, and I think some things are just simple typos where at the top they say it's going to be patient age 17 years and younger, but then under IPP it says patient age 18 and older, and then similar things with continuous veno-veno hemodiafiltration, multiple hemoglobins, including hemoglobin F and C, et cetera. Now, this one actually has exclusions, so some of those would be thrown out. The hemoglobin S's, et cetera, would all fall under their exclusion criteria, so they would be removed.
Okay. So what's the pleasure of the group. Do you want to continue on this, excluding the EHR specifications, and get some response from the developer on those? Any objections to that, or think it's unnecessary? Okay. All right.
Let's go on as Karen has outlined.
Okay. So we'll get back to PCPI about all about the electronic specifications for the e-specifications for this one as well. Okay, so reliability. We can go ahead and vote today. High, moderate, low, insufficient.
Florian?
Low.
Thank you.
Is that it?
Okay.
Okay, 20.
Okay. All right.
We have one high, 13 moderate, 4 low, 2 insufficient.
Okay.
Validity testing. Same strategy expert panel. Same expert panel.
Okay.
You know.
Okay. So validity, of course, includes, you know, specifications consistent with the evidence, validity testing, which I believe, Rick, is it again face validity that was presented, I believe?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Okay. And then whether there's any issue with exclusions or not having risk adjustment. Any discussion?
This is Lori. Can I just clarify the expert panel? This was the adult measure they were voting on. The results are identical, or was this on the pediatric measure they voted on?
This was on the pediatric measure.
Okay. Any discussion? All right. Let's go ahead and vote. Validity, high, moderate, low, insufficient.
Florian?
Moderate.
Thank you.
Okay, question number. Has everyone voted who's going to vote? Okay. We should send it 30 seconds. All right. Nobody voted high, 16 moderate, 1 low, 2 insufficient. So we can assume that the
right.
next
so,
vote would pass.
Right. So that would pass scientific acceptability. So we need to see, were any disparities identified? With this particular measure?
There are disparities in some of the sub-cohorts and populations, yes. And there is data to show that African-American children with CKD and dialysis, entered dialysis with lower hemoglobins, and there is data on that. Pediatric patients, yes.
So do the measure specification scoring and analysis allow for identification of those subunits?
It's currently set up, no.
So, and we're kind of working our way through what, I should also preface this by saying we currently have a disparities project going on where they're going to make some more recommendations about how to handle this in measurement. But was in the submission form, did TCPI talk about the disparity? You want to go to 2C?
Lauren, you want to read? Regards the results of this measure to be stratified by race, ethnicity, gender, and primary language, have included these in variables as recommended data elements to be collected.
Okay. So.
So they have the data, and so it's possible for them to put it out in a format where disparities can be analyzed.
Correct. I was wrong. It's there.
So the measurement specs do allow the scoring and analysis by group? I'm just trying to understand that, because that's what we're being asked here.
Right. So you want to?
Sure. So if you had a, let's use the manual collection of a measure just because it's easier to understand conceptually than an EHR or a claim. So if you had a manual collection form, you'd simply indicate the, what did we say, race, ethnicity, gender, and primary language for that patient, and then you would be able to run data analysis on those variables to group patients by different races, ethnicities, genders, or primary languages.
So the measurement specs have all of those in them right now?
Yes, we recommend they be collected.
Well, no, those aren't in the measure specifications currently. Okay. So right now So I think probably the way to look at this is not going to make or break the measure going forward. So if the answer is no, it's no. You don't have this stop at this point. And certainly when they bring the EHR specifications back, that can be noted that those are specifically included. And that should probably be also indicated in the kind of English language specification. Okay, so shall we go ahead and vote on this? High, moderate, low, or insufficient?
Lorian, disparities?
Moderate.
It's the magic number. We have 12 voting moderate, 1 low, and 7 insufficient. So moving on to usability. The next slide. Rick, did you have any comments or the work group on usability?
I think it is feasible. It can be measured, and it can be accumulated on a regular basis.
The all raters rated it moderate or high.
Okay. Anyone? Any discussion? All right. Usability: high, moderate, low, or insufficient. Go ahead.
Lorian?
Moderate.
Stuck at 18. Anybody else voting? I guess 30 seconds is enough. Okay, let's stop it there. Okay, 6 rated at high, 14 moderate, so it passes the usability criteria. And then feasibility.
Okay.
Rick, any comments on that?
I think most have looked at high and moderate.
Any questions or issues about feasibility? All right. Tanae, start.
Feasibility, high, moderate, low, and sufficient.
Lorian?
Moderate.
Okay. So 12 high, 8 moderate. So no problem with the feasibility criteria.
Okay.
So the final question is,
Yes.
Does this meet the NQF criteria for endorsement?
Okay.
The clock is running.
Right. Yes, no,
yes.
Abstain.
Yes, no, abstain.
Lorian?
No.
Okay. So 17 yes and 2 no.
Okay. Very good.
Well, we're rolling now.
We're
through anemia.
Okay, so now we need to do...
So we're going to move to cardiovascular now without a pause, and we'll first start by having those measure developers who have cardiovascular entries, submissions, to please give us a brief description.
Lauren, you want to say who... No PPPI is here. Do we have representatives from Active Health Management?
Yes.
Okay. We'll let you go on the phone first. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. So this is Maureen Allen. I'm Senior Medical Director with Active Health Management. I'd like to take the opportunity to thank the committee and the NQF for giving us this opportunity to listen to the discussions about our measures and to contribute where appropriate. We have two measures that are up for review for the annual maintenance process. 0626 chronic kidney disease lipid profile monitoring, which is a process managed measure, and 0627 chronic kidney disease with LDL greater than 130, which is an outcome measure. As a brief summary, and you'll see in the literature that's submitted with our form, these measures address the gaps in care related to identifying patients with chronic kidney disease who also have dyslipidemia and are at risk of ischemic vascular disease. Our measures use clinically enriched administrative data, and more recently, we've also incorporated line items for health information exchange data, data coming from electronic health.
Okay, thank you. PCPI.
Thank you. I'm Catherine Oss, policy analyst with the PCPI. And our cardiovascular measures were originally created in 2007 with our chronic kidney disease work group, and they have just been updated with our current work group with the updated evidence. And they have been tested for reliability and validity. And as well, they're currently in use with PQRS.
Okay. So we'll start with 626.
No. Who's doing 626? Okay, that should be on Ruben.
Right. Ruben, you're up again.
Good afternoon. and this is for endorsement maintenance. Essentially is a lipid profile done on a time period of 12 months on anybody with CKD, essentially percentage of patients with chronic kidney disease from 1 to 6. So it includes dialysis, and it includes transplant patients. And the denominator includes males over 10 years old, females over 13 years old, again, diagnosed with any stage of CKD. There were only some general exclusions. There were no specific exclusions. The committee, the work group that work on this measure, at least if we start looking at the impact 1A at the high impact, there was one intermediate or insufficient, I'm sorry, one medium, one high, and two lows. Comments? And I would like to bring up that the next three measures we will be talking about have to do with lipids, and there's one measure very close to this measure we're going to talk later today. So they're going to be very similar, except the denominator may be different. But that's just a comment.
So impact seems variability in terms of the initial reviewers' thoughts about that.
I was on the L side. My concern about this measure for CKD and others is that they rely on CPTs and physician diagnosis of chronic kidney disease, thereby potentially missing the majority of people that actually have chronic kidney disease, who may be cared for by a primary care doctor for their diabetes, hypertension, and have a creatinine of 1.5 without any recognition in the medical record that they have CKD, and therefore they're basically excluded from many of the measures we're going to talk about, be it cholesterol or blood pressure or other things. I can tell you in our CKD registry at the Cleveland Clinic, you can get into it either because you have two low GFRs or that the doctor has made the diagnosis with an ICD-9 code or has a listing in the problem list. And the overwhelming majority have inclusion into the registry, and we're talking about over 60,000 patients, have inclusion into the registry because of CKD diagnoses rather than the doctor making the diagnosis. So I don't have an answer for that in these different measures we'll talk about, but I think the group needs to recognize that potentially we're missing probably a majority of patients with chronic kidney disease if we have as a threshold the doctor identifying them based upon a CPT or ICD-9 code.
Okay, and maybe what we can do is separate that out. I think that's a very important part of specifications and validity. I think what we want to address right here if we had measures regarding lipid management, lipid monitoring in this population.
Okay, so I'd be happy to proceed then. My concern with this particular measure presentation is the review of the evidence is rather superficial and dated. Particularly, there are two randomized controlled trials in the dialysis population looking at cholesterols and statin use that are negative. And then more recently, we have the SHARP trial, which includes both CKD patients and dialysis patients, which is a positive trial. And in that sense, that information may actually strengthen the rationale for this trial, but it goes unmentioned.
And I agree. This is Lori, and I also scored it as low, but that was submitted. I feel like the data submitted is higher, but based on general understanding of the field, I think you argue that it's moderate in impact.
Alan?
I mean, I'd suggest that lipids are a national health priority, and the issue around the strength of the evidence is something we can consider after this point. But at this point, I think this question is pretty self-evident, and we need to move past this one.
Thank you. Great. So are we ready to vote on impact?
Okay. All right. Mark, Renee. High, moderate, low, insufficient impact is what you're voting on.
Florian?
Moderate.
Okay, we're up to 20. I think that's 21. Okay, we're all back. Okay, we have 3 voting high, 12 moderate, 4 low, 2 insufficient. So next is the performance gap question. In the performance gap, they bring one study that showed that only 75% of patients with CKD had some type of cholesterol testing in a year. They also bring some concerns about disparities of care in a population, whether commercial versus uninsured, whether diabetic, hypertensives, and also race.
Okay. I'm a little concerned that we're applying data on a lot of this from the wrong population to this population. This is kids as well as adults. So we're mixing two very disparate groups with data only as it relates to adults.
That is completely correct, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think we'll get to this, I guess, in the evidence, but to me there's a lot of heterogeneity. You have kids and adults, you have non-dialysis CKD and dialysis. Oh, and we also have prevalent CAD or cardiovascular disease and people without prevalent CVD, which means you're mixing primary and secondary prevention. This seems very broad in scope, and a lot of the evidence and the importance may be different among any of those groups, dialysis, not dialysis, kids versus adults, or those with and without pre-existing cardiovascular disease. The way I read it, it seems like this covers all those groups, or do they make accommodations that those will be treated separately?
Well, the issue before us right now is performance gap, and that may not, you know,
so, and
as
this
opposed
is
to a measure specification.
A monitoring measure, do you think that?
Only that it depends on it. The performance gap, is there, I guess the gap depends on if there's evidence that there should be a reason to be doing it. So that's the only reason why. I mean, I think the performance gap and the evidence, I realize it's a discrete issue, but they're interrelated, right, and to some extent.
I have another question, and that is to which physician population this pertains. So is this nephrologist, pediatric nephrologist, adult nephrologist, pediatricians, family physicians?
It's all of the above.
All of that?
Yeah.
Developer, CCPI, it would apply to any physician. I mean, I'm sorry, active health.
So it would apply to any physician who is taking care of a patient with chronic kidney disease. So it's not across the nephrologist, yes. Sorry, there's a lot of feedback. Nephrologist, if there was a primary care physician involved as well, that would also be patient as well.
Okay. All right. So Jeff, you brought up that the data on performance gap is about one particular group that's covered in the measure. Is that what your point is?
Yeah, there's very limited data here about any performance gap, and what there is doesn't seem to apply to most of or many of the patients to whom this might apply, and it doesn't really look at all the different practice settings in which this might apply. I'm more than a little bit uncomfortable with potentially endorsing or approving a performance measure that's going to apply to lots of different types of practices and types of physicians about which we're not experts. You know.
Just make one comment. We did provide supplemental evidence with additional practicing care studies, so we did provide that last week.
Okay, so you said that was in the information you provided us last week, okay?
Yes, there's another study that looks at the Kozolki hypertension, and diabetes. Care guidelines for CKD. And also talks about testing care in terms of the measurement of lipids. So there are other studies.
We're having a hard time understanding.
I'm having a hard time too. So there's a lot of echo coming back my way, so I have to apologize.
Are you on a speakerphone or?
Yes.
Can you pick up the?
Is this better?
Pick it up the handset.
Is this better?
It sounds better. Yes.
Okay.
So data on performance gap. You submitted more data. Is that what you were saying?
Uh-oh.
Oh, my God, it might have gotten cut off. Okay, so what we're talking about right now is performance gap, opportunity for improvement, and then we will address the evidence and the specifications if we end up moving forward with this. So right now the question is, you know, is there information that supports that there's a performance gap on lipid monitoring, and the options are high, moderate, low, insufficient.
Let's vote.
Okay. Renee? Florian?
Moderate.
We had 21
before.
Okay, we have 8 committee members voting moderate, 5 low, 7 insufficient. So it's rather down to the, I guess the mean would really be in the low category.
Okay. We'll continue. We'll talk about, Ruben.
Does it stop there?
No, even though it's you have to have all 3 met, we'll continue to do the evidence so that we can look at importance all together and then address.
Right, we already let that go
right.
On one measure.
Right, whether we need to. So let's, this is not an outcome. So let's talk about the evidence. We'll talk about it all together, then we'll rate quantity, quality, consistency. So, Ruben?
On the evidence, they mostly look at KDOQI. They look at 32 studies that I think KDOQI had. They mention about some tables and essentially talking about this lipidemia and CKD. They do mention, and I quote, studies included are of mixed quality. And there's no, and they mentioned this, there's no RCTs testing the hypothesis that this lipidemia cause atherosclerotic disease and CKD. So that's what they bring in the evidence and the number and some of the quality discussion.
And what is the evidence about? Is it, it's obviously not about monitoring. It must be about what is the...
From what I see here is clinical practice guidelines that they're quoting. And they're selected some individual studies.
And it's basically the link between CKD and hyperlipidemia?
Correct.
Okay. Other reviewers?
I'm not a reviewer,
oh,
but a question, and I guess thinking about the how this measure is set up, the question really is, I think, does monitoring lipids influence outcomes? Because there's no goal here. So it's just, the question is, do you improve patient outcomes by monitoring? Is that a fair interpretation?
Yeah, and I think this is back in the category that we talked about with the first measure. It's about whether you assess, and there's many steps that have to happen before you actually influence the intermediate outcome or health outcome. And as someone mentioned, there's never going to be trials about how often you assess. So it's always going to be indirect evidence, but
generally, you know, from a performance measurement standpoint, the direction that we've been going is, you know, it's preferable to have something closer to the desired outcome. But, you know, there are circumstances, as we've talked about before, where that there may be some exceptions to that. But
and if I may remind the committee that, again, when we look at quantity, quality, and consistency, like it was well stated, this is a measure that includes a lot of groups of people, of patients, a lot of subgroups.
Chair, I'm concerned about the observational study that links CKD to hyperlipidemia, but and then the next study quotes reduction in mortality in CKD patients who are treated with a statin. There are also a few small volume observational studies showing that across the board, statins reduce inflammation, microinflammation, and may have beneficial effects in CKD atherosclerosis. So what's quoted here is a fairly loose association of benefit. That, in other words, just the fact that patients have hyperlipidemia and are on a statin and have reduction in mortality compared to CKD patients who are not on a statin with hyperlipidemia is not absolute proof of the benefit of this monitoring, I don't think.
Can I ask the pediatricians in the room if they're aware of any evidence that lipid monitoring makes any difference to outcomes in children?
We have data on the CKID, the chronic kidney disease in children's study, recent data as of May, looking at 680-odd patients enrolled over the last 10 years, at multiple time points in many of them, showing that, again, over half of them had lipid abnormalities. This is not dialysis. We do not have a large data set to look at the dialysis. Now, whether the lipid abnormalities in the CKD is associated with adverse outcomes, that's what we're studying. And the number of the children in that group and teenagers who have abnormal blood pressures, et cetera, LDH, this is what we're looking at.
And in your practices, are you using data from lipid monitoring to change what you're doing?
I think more of us are.
Joe, would you repeat your comments about the evidence? Because you made some comments earlier about evidence.
Well, the general comment about this area was that there are at least two different bodies of evidence with randomized controlled trials that are not mentioned. The first is in the dialysis population, the 4D trial, which are German diabetic dialysis patients, and the Aurora counterpart, both statin placebo with negative trials, no specific difference in the ESRD population. A lot of spin as to why that may have existed in terms of pre-existing disease. But the newest piece of information called the SHARP trial, which is in 9,000 patients, 6,000 CKD before dialysis, 3,000 with dialysis split between PD and hemo, used lipid-lowering therapy that included a statin and showed statistically less cardiovascular events in that trial. No difference in renal outcomes, but it was a positive trial that I think would at least bring a heightened awareness to the issue of dyslipidemias in CKD, whether or not they're truly causative in and of themselves, whether there are pleiotropic effects of statins or the other medication, to be announced. But it, in my judgment, would at least strengthen the rationale for a measure, maybe not this measure, but a measure to be at least checking lipids, whether or not you do something with them, this is just a monitor question. But this measure tends to be somewhat unfocused in the populations across pediatrics, the CKD, the dialysis and transplant.
Lorian?
For quantity, moderate.
Okay. One high, nine moderate, eight low. Thanks. One high, nine moderate, eight low, three insufficient evidence.
Next
was the quality of the body of evidence. High, moderate, low, insufficient. Is Lorian gone?
Lorian?
Quality insufficient.
I guess no one else is going to vote? All right. Oh. We're up to 20. Okay. Okay. Seven moderate, six low, seven insufficient evidence. Let's go down to the low at least.
We're voting on what was presented in the application, correct? Not things we know outside. But what was presented in the, that was my understanding,
yeah,
Karen, from the beginning, was that we vote on what was presented in the application for the measure. Or I want to make sure I don't misunderstand.
Right, okay. And what we talked about, that was our guidance for your preliminary evaluation. One of the things that we want you to do as a committee is if people are aware of evidence, to bring that to the attention, and then the committee can, use that also in their ratings as in this meeting. So Joe mentioned a couple additional studies, but...
Yeah, you can take that into account.
Right, and I think, you know, you have to have a discussion about that and have a discussion about how confident you are in terms of, you know, what we know about those studies that people bring up in the meeting, or whether we need to ask the developer to go back and get something more. Okay.
You know, one issue that creeps up a number of times,
mm-hmm.
or has crept up a number of times, is that the evidence may be good, so the SHARP trial was a well-done trial, but may not apply at all to many of the patients who would be included in this measure. So we have to be very careful about, you know, thinking about both the quality and the appropriateness of that evidence to what we're discussing, because sometimes I think there's a little bit of a disconnect.
Right, and I think this is something we'll need to figure out a little bit better right now. I mean, that's kind of encompassed in quality, the directness of the evidence for what you're intending to measure, but, you know, perhaps we need to, you know, think about that, and certainly as you go through these next, you know, the rest of today and tomorrow, if you have some suggestions for us, we'd, you know, definitely like to hear those.
Can I just on a side, and Michael's not here to support this, but in pediatrics, we treat the lipid abnormalities not because they're symptomatic, but because we're concerned about what's going to happen to that patient when we transition them to you folks. And that's really the basis of our treatment. We don't have data to substantiate our treatment. Well, you guys do that anyway, but, you know, this is the truth. This is where we are with it.
Okay.
That's not very good. Okay, so based on Michael's point, do we need to revoke the last one or on the quality of the evidence?
Well, there was enough to do,
because he was
right?
saying we can take, because I think we agree we could take into account newer information.
I would just second the point that, once again, the way this measure is currently written encompasses a wide swath of...
And added to that is the comments we've made already. I mean, there's several good studies in the adult population that just came out, not in this huge group that were in this measure. So I think we need to keep thinking that this measure is a huge group of patients, and we don't have data on them.
So going back to Peter's question, do you want to revote on quality or continue moving forward?
Does anybody want to revote? No? Okay.
Okay.
So let's go to consistency then. High, moderate, low, or insufficient?
Lorian?
Insufficient.
Thank you.
Four, moderate. 5, low. 12, insufficient. So applying this to our grid, I think we get a no.
Okay, next slide, Tanae.
Right.
Okay, so basically with quality
and consistency.
On consistency would mean it doesn't pass evidence. We also had a problem with performance gap, I believe.
Let's see, consistency was really more insufficient rather than low.
Right.
You know, maybe that needs to be taken into account under the grid if you're going to let people vote that way.
Mm-hmm.
But I think we can agree it hasn't really, for several reasons, it hasn't really met the criteria for quality or consistency.
So the next question then on evidence. So the question would be, again, does this measure merit consideration for an exception to the evidence? Yes.
I guess what I'm struggling with is that this is a very important measure, but it's the mishmashing of all the different kidney patients together. If they divided it up into, you know, threes and fours, and then ESRD, and then transplant,
sure,
I would feel much more comfortable.
There is a competing measure that we'll be talking about, correct?
So just to clarify, I mean, going forward, there's a couple of things that could be considered. You know, we'll continue to finish up this measure, and as you know, you can make some recommendations to the developer if you think it's really an important measure, but that, you know, stratifying or, you know, restricting the denominator to where the evidence leads. So that would be one option. One option would be, you know, to just vote on this measure as is, and then we can come back to it to look at after we've looked at all the lipid measures. So
if we did ask them to split it up, would that then have to wait till the next review cycle, whenever that would be, or could it be still?
I don't think it would necessarily have to wait till the next review cycle. I mean, we'd have to have a discussion with the measure developer. Active Health, are you still on?
Yes, I am.
Okay. I think we lost you a little bit before. Should the committee decide that they want you to limit the denominator or do some stratification, is that something that could be accomplished? Or
certainly. We can certainly break the groups into pediatrics versus adults, and then we can also break that versus the different stages of kidney disease. We can certainly do that.
All right.
Are we asking, though, just to stratify into different groups, and so now we have one for peds, now we have one for post-transplant, now we have one for, or to just pick a group where there's the most evidence that the metric would more likely to pass. Ruby.
Okay.
My recommendation would be to vote with what we have now. And like you suggested, Karen, we could come back after we see all the other measures we're going to discuss. But I have trouble when we start too many cooks in the kitchen. Can be a problem. So,
okay. Wise words. Okay. And also, just remind the group we're only going to consider this metric, you know, on its own first. We're not going to try to say there's a better one coming down or a worse one coming down the pike. Okay, so.
So, is there any thought that you want to move forward? It sounds like there's still an issue with the evidence focused on being consistent with how the measure is specified that you want to. Is there anyone who wants to invoke the exception for expert opinion since this is an assessment measure? Okay.
See, no hands. I think we can.
Okay. So basically, this measure would not pass importance to measure and report. And but as we kind of get through the sets of measures, we can certainly come back to this and pick it up again if the committee desires. Okay.
Okay. So we'll move to 627, chronic kidney disease with LDL greater than or equal to 130, use of lipid-lowering agent. Dr. Nally.
Thank you. This is a renewal submitted by the same Active Health Management Group. The description of the measure is the percentage of patients with chronic kidney disease and an LDL greater to or equal to 130 that have a current refill for a lipid-lowering agent. The numerator is the patients with current refill for a lipid-lowering agent. The denominator, all patients age 18 and older diagnosed with CKD, including CKD5, dialysis, or transplant, and an LDL above 130. Now, as I read that one time, I read it as all patients with CKD, including 5, dialysis, transplant. And one could interpret it as that way because in their definition, there are some general codes for CKD, whereas there are more specific codes for CKD5. So that's one confusion I have right out of the start. And then there are some general exclusions. Is it possible to ask the measured steward at this time, are they trying to limit it to CKD5 dialysis and transplant and not have codes in there with the general CKD or general nephrotic syndrome, et cetera?
On page 7, they show it as being CKD5.
But then they include CVT codes for 585 NOS and nephrotic syndrome and other things. So I want to be sure that they are indeed limiting it to CKD 5 dialysis and transplant. Is that correct, Measure Stewart?
That is correct. Where you see the NOS code, that's in conjunction with a threatening clearance between 0.1 and 14. So it's not an NOS code by itself. It's in conjunction with a threatening clearance.
Okay, thank you for that clarification.
You're welcome.
Okay, so any comments about impact that you want to make, and then we can go on to, we'll vote on that and then go on to the other.
Well, I think, as was just articulated, the issue of dyslipidemia, cardiovascular disease, and the CKD and dialysis population is indeed important. However, again, the measure per se, the review of the evidence, is again somewhat cursory, doesn't bring into contact some of the trials that we just talked about, et cetera.
Okay.
So are there other comments of the other reviewers?
let's go ahead and vote then on impact, and then we'll move on to performance gap and evidence. Okay, so impact, high, moderate, low, insufficient. Gloria?
Moderate.
Results are 3 high, 14 moderate, and 3 low. Nicely balanced. Okay. Next, performance gap.
The performance gap cites a single study recently published this year in primary care practices regarding a moderately large number of patients. But we don't have a great deal of information about the quality of that evidence. They do suggest that there is a performance gap.
Joe, as you pointed out, this is as you clarified, this the denominator is stage 5 in dialysis patients, and this performance gap data is stage 3 and stage 4.
So correct. There's a dichotomy there, as once they've clarified that this is 5 in dialysis and transplant, the dichotomy exists that the single study cited is not applicable to that patient population that the measure addresses.
Ruben?
And again, I'm somewhat, again, confused. I understand the comment that was made, but when we look at the numerator, especially the denominator, includes all the CKDs and nephrotic syndrome. And again, I have a...
Well, so I specifically asked the measure steward that question, and some of the specific codes are probably... related to nephrotic syndrome do not apply except if they have CKD5. All the rest of the codes are dialysis, ESRD, and CKD5 transplant codes. Additional comments or questions?
So it's
really not possible to say that there's a performance gap when the evidence is disparate.
To the developer, do you care to defend that there, the way you presented the performance gap?
Can you give me a couple minutes just to bring up the actual description of what we put there?
We're not hearing you very well.
I just need to bring up the actual measure just to see the description of what we've got there. But the performance gap is really based upon the recommendations that were made by Kadoki in terms of screening patients with stage 5 disease or dyslipidemia and then treating those patients who have an abnormal LDL. So this is part of the general recommendations made by the guidelines.
This measure was previously endorsed. Did you, and I can't remember if we asked or if you provided, I'm trying to pull it up.
I think
performance gap information on the actual measure, Joe?
3 weeks ago, I had a telephone conversation with Lauren, noting that this was kind of a private entity submitting the measure, but I couldn't find anywhere publicly reported kind of the performance of this measure. And Lauren was going to address that question to the measure developer, and at least I don't have access to that information. Is there publicly available information on the last year and a half or two of outcomes of this measure?
We don't report out publicly the performance of the measures. Typically what we'll do on behalf of clients, we'll generate reports that we give to our clients specifically
we anticipate is this year and probably next year, as we participate in accountable care initiative, that a lot of our measures will be reported publicly at that point in time through our clients, but we don't directly report out publicly on measures.
Unfortunately, that makes it very difficult for us to look at reliability, usability, feasibility, and performance gap if we don't know how the measure's gone.
We can certainly give you the measures based upon our book of business and based upon some of the testing that we've done, but in terms of actually reporting publicly, that again, as I said, is usually done through our clients.
Thank you.
All right. Okay, so any other comments about...
Is it possible that we could put this on hold, so to speak, and let them go back and look at their data for performance gap and report to us at least where they are? They've had this a year and a half or 2 years, and I think if we're being asked to re-endorse it and they have data, we should see the data.
We'll be happy to provide that for you if you give us the opportunity.
Alan?
I guess from a system standpoint, it's tough to do that because we would apply that same principle every time we find number four, insufficient evidence. We'd always say, well, let's table it until they give us better evidence. My urging would be for us to vote today on all the measures with the data that we have and then to move out from there.
But what's different here is we know she's saying they have that information, and so it's just sitting there. They should have supplied it. The fact they didn't supply it with the application is their problem, I guess. I mean, you can say they should have and they didn't.
Well, let me ask, because we specifically asked for information on the opportunity for improvement. We went back to you and you just gave us your original response. So I guess that's the question of whether you can provide performance on the measure as it's specified based on, you know, the data you have over the past year and a half. Even if you're not going to identify individual physicians or facilities, you know, distribution of the scores, you know, by quartile or decile, however. So that's the question. It's unclear because you just reiterated your original response.
Is that a comment for me? Hello?
Yeah, we hear you. Are you using the handset now?
Yes. No. Yes, I am using the handset. I'm sorry. Yes. I think part of the problem that we had, and certainly, you know, the InCare staff knows that we've had some difficulty in terms of timing. However, if you wish to get our book of business numbers in terms of the performance of the measure, we can actually give you that. What we've given you are numbers that we had based upon a client or two that we had, and then based upon some testing on real data, but then we can certainly give you numbers for our book of business, so you'll have that to evaluate the measure.
I still have concern that even if this data would be forthcoming to this group, it is still not being publicly reported, which would be the mission to, you know, establish good health for the country.
But that's also the case with the PCPI measures at this point. It's being reported, but it's not publicly available for anyone to view the performance data. So we do, that is definitely a goal of NQF, and if it's not, we want some plans to move towards that direction. And certainly reporting it is at one spectrum of the accountability or transparency scale, so it's moving in that direction. And so I understand your question. We would definitely get to that under usability. So, Helen, do you have any suggestions on what we should do?
My general feeling is if there's information that you can gather in a timely manner, you should have the full information when you make your assessment.
All right. So unless there's objections, then I think we'll just go ahead and vote based on the information they supplied.
Okay. Michael, did you have a question? So
And I'm sorry, I don't know your name that's on the phone for Active Health.
This is Maureen Allen.
Maureen. Do you by any chance have that data available? I mean, that you could tell us now? I mean, do you have any information that you're looking at about your measure that you could verbally tell us?
I don't have that right now. I would have to go back to our team that does the data analysis.
Right.
So I don't have that available right now.
So perhaps what we could do is vote on it based on what we know. Again, maybe we'll have to think about, after we get through this list, if there are some opportunities to provide some information that would perhaps change the course of how things have gone, that we will relook at those. Does that make sense?
Right. No guarantees it'll change anything, but we're willing to look at.
Okay.
If it's submitted in a timely manner.
Okay. So importance to measure and report. Is there a performance gap? And this is I guess we'll also mention if the committee is aware of evidence about, again, even though it's not specific for this measure, this is a measure about less than 130. So it's an intermediate clinical outcome. So we can certainly hear from the committee if you have knowledge about evidence about opportunity for improvement or performance gap. Okay.
I don't see any forthcoming.
All right.
So we're going to vote 1B, performance gap, high, moderate, low, or insufficient.
Dorian?
Insufficient?
Correct.
Thank you.
For the 30s. Okay. Well, the insufficient carries the vote with 16, 1 low, 3 moderate. So.
Okay, so we'll follow our process. We'll still ask you to evaluate evidence because that also may determine whether you would even want more information on opportunity for improvement. So let's see, who is presenting on this one?
Joe.
Joe, you want to talk about the quantity, quality, and consistency of the evidence for this same measure. So we'll finish out importance and then see where we're at.
I believe we've already made some of those statements about the evidence already in terms of the measure as submitted with small numbers of studies cited in a dated fashion without any randomized controlled trial information.
I had one question. The SHARP study, do you know what the achieved LDL was in the SHARP study? Because that actually, I mean, just because this was the LDL of the 130, I don't...
Unfortunately, everything was reported in international units. The cholesterols were like 5.3, which means 5 times 40. So that's, they're about 230 on the way in with an LDL of about 120, I think. We should look that up. If it, my secretary's on it. Give me a minute. He'll come back with a cheesesteak.
Okay. Any other comments on the evidence from the reviewers? The preliminary reviewers or additional committee member comments? Okay. Well, then let's go ahead and vote on quantity of studies for evidence. For this measure, 0627, high, moderate, low, insufficient.
Florian, quantity?
Moderate.
Okay, let's go with that. 6 moderate, 9 low, 5 insufficient. So that would come out really as a low,
right.
I imagine. Okay, the next is the quality.
Quality of the body of evidence. Go ahead and start it. High, moderate, low, insufficient.
Florian?
Moderate.
Okay. The first 20 you vote. 4 voted moderate, 11 low, 5 insufficient. And finally, consistency. High, moderate, low, or insufficient.
Florian?
For consistency, low.
I'm sorry, was that low?
Correct, low.
Thank you.
Okay, 3 moderate, 10 low, 7 insufficient. I think we have to rate all 3 categories as low or worse.
Okay.
And so that would yield a no from
right.
the diagram.
Right. Okay. All right. So we're...
So to sum up importance, then...
It would not meet importance.
To not make the performance gap or the...
Right.
Body of evidence.
Okay.
So.
Okay.
We're rolling. Okay, so we're up to 3:30. What do you think?
You want to take a break? Or?
Well, how are we doing out there? Are you getting your second wind like me? You can tell, can't you? All right, well, let's do one more. Then,
okay.
You know? 1668, laboratory testing. Joe has this one also.
Thank you. So we're in a similar vein here, but as contrast the other two, this is a... new measure submitted by the AMA PCPI team. The descriptor is percentage of patients age 18 and older with a diagnosis of CKD stage 3, 4, or 5 not receiving renal replacement therapy who had a fasting lipid profile performed and results documented at least once during the past 12 months. So the numerator is the patients who have the fasting lipid profile performed and documented. Denominator are all patients age 18 or older with CKD 3, 4, 5 not receiving renal replacement therapy. So this is, given our other discussions, restricted to CKD 3, 4, and 5, not dialysis and transplant. 18 and older. So we've limited to adults and non-dialysis CKD.
So why don't we go ahead and vote on impact, and then we can move on to performance gap. Impact, high, moderate, low, insufficient.
Florian?
I think the group as a whole had either moderate or high. In terms of the impact, if I read that correctly.
Right.
Are there comments from the group?
So we'll stop it and restart this.
Oh,
so.
my bad.
Sorry. No, that's okay.
No, you were right to ask for others.
Right. Yeah. Okay.
Can you say that again, Peter?
As usual, Dr. Nally is correct. That make you feel better?
I'm leaving.
So,
the group have
anybody
comments? Again, I would also observe that I don't believe those randomized controlled trials were included in this body of evidence either, up to the Sharp trial.
Okay. Well, let's vote on impact, and then we'll get on to the.
Thank you.
Okay. Tanae? This is for impact, high, moderate, low, insufficient.
And Lorian, impact?
Moderate.
Thank you.
Six voted high, 14 moderate, 1 low. Okay. So is there a performance gap? Joe?
In this case, we are provided some information about the demonstrating a performance gap, including the similar data from the 2008, where about 56% of patients did not receive the optimal care, which would be getting a lipid profile. And there is three or four studies cited related to performance gap from USRDS and other sources.
Okay, more discussion on this? Okay, let's vote. 1B, performance gap, high, moderate, low, or insufficient.
Florian? Performance gap?
Moderate.
I think we can stop there. Of those voting, 5 voted high, 13 moderate, 1 insufficient. Okay, so
this is a process measure. We'll move on to the talk about the evidence, quantity, quality, and consistency. This is basically an assessment measure, so it's not proximal, it's more distal to the desired outcome. And so, Joe, you're going to make some comments about the evidence.
The evidence here, in a way, reflects some of the discussions we've had, but in addition, there is considerable more text or meat to the discussion related to performance gap, to disparities, and other lines of evidence, with citations related to disparities and other issues.
Okay, and we've just talked about opportunity for improvement, so now we're on to the clinical evidence, 1C, right? Did you guys vote on? Am I wrong?
No, you're right.
Okay.
I'm sorry, did I confuse the issue?
According to the spreadsheet, the group,
so we've had you vote on opportunity for improvement. Do we need to go on performance gap? Do we need to go back to talk about that? No? Okay. So now we're talking about 1C, the evidence, the quantity, quality, and consistency of the body of evidence. And who else reviewed this measure?
This is Lorian. I was one of the reviewers. I did initially. I'm sorry, can you hear me, Karen?
Now we hear you.
Okay. I was also one of the reviewers, and I did put insufficient initially for quality and consistency. That was primarily based on what was, I would modify that based on this so far regarding this body of literature.
Yeah, I mean, in brief, they basically quoted KDOQI guidelines in this area, which is a B level of evidence, and did not bring into play the randomized controlled trial that we mentioned previously.
Well, I mean, just to quote what they said, they started with 258 trials that they reviewed, but they did not give us the number that they eventually came out with after their filters. So in terms of quantity, we have no data here that will answer that question.
And what is the, because this is about assessing lipid monitoring, what is the evidence about? Is it about treatment, or is it about association of lipid levels to complications?
They say the principal reason to evaluate dyslipidemias in patients with CKD is to detect abnormalities that may be treated to reduce the incidence of ACVD, which is unproven, but that's their assertion here.
And then they also open the question of progression of CKD and with dyslipidemias and or their treatments. But they're speculative, I guess. At least prior to SHARP.
And SHARP isn't quoted in here.
No, that is, again, missing from this measure also.
Again, just in terms of the question that we're being asked in terms of numbers, if you go through the what they went through, they looked at lots of studies. It's real clear. They don't give us the final number, including manuals that were added in, et cetera. But we're talking in terms of hundreds, not in terms of two or four or eight. I'm just quoting from
right.
their
right.
form.
Okay.
Yeah, so I think the quantity question may be the easier of the...
Okay.
You could probably vote that. Okay, let's vote the quantity question. High, moderate, low, insufficient.
Florian? Quantity?
Aye.
Okay. So 13 high. 6 moderate, 1 insufficient. The next question is the quality of the body of evidence. I think it's clear that they're not addressing directly what the metric is, which is that the measurement is done.
Discussion? About the quality of the body of evidence. And Joe, you're saying it's missing the latest.
It's the same comment applied broadly across the board. A lot of this is inferring what is good for the general population, maybe good for the CKD population who have an increased prevalence of heart disease. The proof of concept, I guess, would be the SHARP trial, and either because of timing or whatever, that is not included in the presentation.
What is the deadline for submitting measures?
I'm going to say, late June? June 8th, yeah. Okay. But you're saying the SHARP trial did support the hypothesis.
Is this the same population as the SHARP trial? CKD 3.5.
Well, of the 9,000 people in SHARP, 6,000 were pre-dialysis CKD, 3,000 were dialysis. Now, as it turns out, over the course of the trial, about 2 of those 6,000 ended up coming to dialysis, but were analyzed under intention to treat. But it's clearly a 9,000 patient study with CKD, the majority of which were non-dialysis.
Did it include CKD3 as well? In SHARP? Because that's the largest group of CKD by far.
The average GFR in SHARP as baseline was 27. They have it splayed out on a introductory table in terms of CKDs, 3s, 4s, and 5s. But the short answer is yes, CKD3 was included, and included about 29% of the non-dialysis group were CKD3. That's by making some slides in the last week, but if certain people over there with this computer would,
Alan?
The other thing, again, they quote that both the NKF task force and the KBOKI work group that looked at these data, and they talk about CKD, and they don't specify which levels, but CKD, both had strongly endorsed measures. So, some of their claims are piggybacking on those two groups that have done this work before.
But the point I want to make is that if this is the same population as the SHARP trial, even though it's not brought up here, and there is evidence that treating does reduce cardiovascular disease, improves cardiovascular outcomes, then in my mind that would improve the quality of the body of evidence that therefore screening is worthwhile because it leads to treatment that makes a difference.
Correct. The SHARP eligibility was men with a creatinine over 1.7 or above and women 1.5 or above, so at least some of them would have had early stages of CKD. So far, I'm only able to find that they reported a percent reduction in lipids rather than achieved LDL. Their average or their mean EGFR at baseline was 27 amongst the 6,247 non-dialysis patients with a standard deviation of 13. So they would have been mostly stage 3 and 4.
So, Jeff,
Ruben, do you have the paper in front of you?
No, but I have to give it to you. I think the bottom line is that you know, the 4D, the Aurora, and the SHARP.
The SHARP is really the only one so far that has shown with treatment improvement in cardiovascular mortality in dialysis patients. All the three studies showed improvement in the CKD world with treatment. But the other two did not show improvement in the ESRD world. So that's the difference with the SHARP, which is the...
But since this is limited to CKD 3, 4, and 5, this would again strengthen the evidence for this particular measure.
So, any other comments before we vote? Okay, let's vote on the quality of body of evidence, high, moderate, low, or insufficient.
Lorian? Lorian, quality?
Moderate.
One high, 19 moderate, and one low. Okay, so let's move on to consistency. Any discussion here? Shall we vote? Okay. Consistency results across the body of evidence. One or high, moderate, low, or insufficient.
Florian?
Moderate.
Okay. 16 moderate, 4 low, and 1 insufficient. So our rating of the body of evidence would give it a pass then, I think. Okay. So to move to the next.
Right. So we, and they passed on impact and
so
importance, opportunity, and evidence. So we'll go on to.
So we don't need to vote on this, right? Everybody's comfortable with the yes?
Right. It just is. Default. I mean,
it has to be. Right. Can't change it. Sorry. Okay. All right. Acceptability, measure properties, reliability. Joe? Are you still up? Yeah, he's still up.
Again, we are presented some evidence on these issues, including then some data samples from 4 nephrology practices with basically 30 CKD patients per practice with Kappa statistics that seem fairly reasonable. My concern is that they have selected nephrology practices for these people with CKD whereby the nephrologist is likely to use some type of CPT or ICD-M diagnostic code. And that, again, we may be missing large numbers of people in the population that are cared by the non-nephrology physicians of the world in terms of internists, primary care doctors, et cetera. So we are given data, but limited to nephrology practices.
So you're addressing really the specifications, which comes also in the reliability consideration, I guess, is that their specifications will leave out large numbers of patients. And while I agree with you, I don't know what we can
Like I said before, I don't know the...
In Cleveland Clinic and Kaiser, we have systems, and
right.
You know, we anybody who walks in our door, we know basically whether that's CKD or not, but who joins a health plan. But, and the same with the Cleveland Clinic, but for most of the country, that's not an option.
Correct.
And so I think we have to decide, is this better than nothing, or turn on your microphone and say that again, Janet.
Is that a function of the measure itself or a function of the process? And so that's the question I'm asking myself, because if it's the measure, then you have to go back and fix it. If it's to try to think about how can we be more inclusive, that's really not a function of the measure itself.
Right. So if I can rephrase what you're saying, then we have to kind of take it as it's, I think we have to take what's given to us and judge it on its merits. And it's unfortunate that it doesn't have a broader, can't include everybody, but is that your point?
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. I think the developer had a clarification.
Clarification, please.
Hi, thanks. We have continued to work on this MicroShot just for your information, and if it's helpful to this measure, we decided to specify a different measure that we weren't able to submit because we didn't have testing data, but to define the diagnosis of CKD as can be identified in one of two ways, a diagnosis of CKD stage 3, 4, or 5. This is a different measure now. CKD NOS or 2 EGFR lab results of less than 60 more than 90 days apart. So we're aware of this issue, and we wanted to capture just what he's saying in a different measure. And I believe, I mean, we'd have to talk with the work group about it, but we could discuss doing the same thing for this measure if it was appropriate. And just a further clarification, non-nephrologists can use this measure. You know, that's not the problem, but I do understand you're talking about capturing the patients without the...
Correct. An internist can write 585.4 down. The question is, do they, or particularly stage three, do they? Not in our 66,000 people, they don't. A lot less frequently than you think. But here's the other question I didn't think about until you brought this up. Is you're talking about a percent of CKD patients. Is this per practice, per doctor? I mean, what is the, who's on the receiving end of this? Only nephrologists? Every internist in the community, et cetera?
Are you asking about the testing?
No. The evaluation process is a percent CKD patients, right, who have this maneuver done. Is that per Dr. Burns or per the University of Pennsylvania or the City of Philadelphia? I mean, who is being critiqued?
It's a physician-level measure.
Thank you. We've seen his work.
A question for the developer regarding reliability testing again. Was this element testing, in other words, you had more than one reviewer look at a given patient's data to see if they extract the same information?
Yes, this is a part of the same, it's all one study that was conducted.
Okay, thank you. Okay, other comments, questions on specifications and reliability testing?
And Lorian, are you still there?
Yes, I am.
I know you're the one who delved into the electronic specifications. Did this measure have electronic specifications, e-specifications as well?
This one does. I think my primary question, it looks like I wrote down when I reviewed them, is if CPT2 code or actual lab results or both would be used to ascertain the numerator. That wasn't clear to me.
We received word before we came also that our specifications team has not neglected to include the lab, the LOINC codes, so those have now been updated, but you have not seen the new specs. So we apologize that those weren't included originally. So it's meant to be both.
Okay, so depending on who implements it, they may either use CPT2 code or they may actually pull direct lab data.
Correct.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, so I think we're ready to vote. Reliability, high, moderate, low, insufficient.
Lorian?
Reliability, moderate. Results,
2 high, 14 moderate, 4 low. Okay, on to validity.
All right. And was this validity, face validity again for this measure, I believe?
That's what it says.
Okay.
Now.
I believe so.
Open expert panel voting.
And were there any issues with threats to validity, with exclusions, risk adjustment wouldn't apply? Yes.
I know this has come up before, and I think this will come up again. Is I just want to make sure I understand how the denominator is being defined. So it's either laboratory criterion for low eGFR or ICD-9 codes?
Yes, from what I understand from our specifications team, depending on whether it's an EHR or claims or paper.
There have been two papers that have shown that ICD-9 codes that identify CKD overall, we're not even talking about 3 versus 4 versus 5 versus 2, you know, there's reasonable specificity, but the sensitivity is not that great, meaning you're going to miss a lot of people. And there are inaccuracies. But this one study was from Medicare claims data. The other was from, I think, VAN Medicare data. I don't know what it's like in other areas. It may be different based on the incentive of physicians to code, based on billing, the VA doesn't bill, et cetera. But that's the type of validity data that I think would be a little bit interesting to think about, because the papers I'm aware of, which are two of them, there were problems in that. Once again, you had some specificity, but not a heck of a lot of sensitivity, and therefore you'd miss people.
I apologize. I think I misspoke. I was talking about the numerator. I'm sorry. I misspoke about that. At this point, the denominator would simply be the codes, the ICD-9 codes.
Okay.
Which will tend to clearly underreport true CKD as it exists in the wild.
Well, another thing I just mentioned is I'd also be concerned if we're really trying to target 3, 4, and 5, I think you also, and I don't think, I'm not aware of anyone who's ever evaluated this, that a CKD code, people might use that for someone, right, who has intact GFR, and you know, and maybe that's okay, but you maybe have people who have really 1 and 2 based on consensus definitions that are being included in that.
Can I raise one other exclusion issue, and that is that there's no upper age limit to this, which, again, maybe there ought to be, in that, you know, an 85-year-old, a 95-year-old, you know, I don't know where the numbers should be drawn. This may not be an appropriate or necessary component of care. A lot of people with CKD in that age group.
I would be curious what the measure stewards say to that. I know, for instance, of the NHANES data, when they're talking GFRs, the cutoff is 85, because above that, I believe there are so few people that they potentially could be identifiable based upon other demographic information. So I think they have an arbitrary cutoff of 85. We have 1,500 people over the age of 90 with CKD in the registry.
We could take that up with the work group.
Well, we're not. I think we're getting off the topic of validity now and talking about specifications. And I think maybe when you're 95, you see exclusions.
Yeah, it's, I mean, it's part of, you know, do you have the measure that's going to really be appropriate in terms of identifying differences in quality? And so
okay.
I think what is being suggested is that, you know, why include those patients? Because maybe it's not quality care to do lipid monitoring over a certain age. I don't know if that's supported by the evidence or... So the question is, what basis is there either to include or to exclude?
I don't think there's any evidence about what age to choose or not to choose.
Okay.
Right, a lot of questions, no answers.
Okay, so I think... Is that going to be a point of contention, Joe?
No, not a point of contention. I'm trying to bite my tongue here because we have a couple papers coming out or being presented at the ASN. But in the very old, sometimes this as a risk factor tends to melt away because we interpret it as all these other competing risks and the fact that you have to die of something. Let's just leave it at that.
All right. Well, shall we, are you ready to vote on validity? Okay.
Okay. High, moderate, low.
High, moderate, low. And Lorian, validity?
Validity. Current.
Moderate?
Yes.
Thank you.
Okay, that's 21. We have one high, 13 moderate, 6 low, 1 insufficient. So it passes reliability and validity. I think we can go on to usability.
Okay.
Joe.
This issue is usability, correct?
Right.
And again, we have some information from the measure steward about the public reporting and uses in CQI. That's about all I could say. The evidence is not greatly detailed. The various websites are referenced, and I must admit I didn't go and check those websites.
And I think generally all of these PQRS, PQRI measures, physicians are reporting, performance data are not publicly available. You know, if you wanted to go look up a physician's performance, that's not accessible at this time.
The intent, though, is that they would be used on things like physician compare and meaningful use and things of that sort. So they are geared up to be used for public reporting.
Okay. Are
okay.
We ready to vote on usability?
Hearing no objections, let's do it.
Florian, usability? Florian?
I'm sorry, I said moderate.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, I think that's it. So 2 high, 16 moderate, and 2 low. Okay,
and
next one is
feasibility.
Yeah. Joe, did you have any comments on feasibility?
The statement is made that the data comes out of the EHR, which would be easy enough to check the labs. My question for the measured steward is, how does one go about checking the documentation in the medical record that the results have been noted? As opposed to laboratory surveillance, which is reasonably easy by comparison, it may prove difficult to find at what point during that year the physician wrote a note that said cholesterol checked and not controlled.
So, there's a question to the measure steward.
I just want to clarify that the measure is actually patients who had it performed. So right now with the specifications, there is no need to be able to tell that the doctor looked at it because most systems just don't have that capability right now. But it is something that we've definitely discussed at the measure development strategy level.
My microphone now works, but at the end of the descriptor said the CKD patients who had a fasting lipid profile performed and results documented at least once within a 12-month period. That's the fly in the ointment. If that indeed exists, is it negotiable to come out? Or does the steward feel like that's a key component of the measure?
I'm sorry, can you ask, are you clarifying whether it's the order or the results that we're looking for?
Well, the measure says you're looking for both, a cholesterol and a documentation that the cholesterol result was
reviewed.
I'm sorry, do you have a specific?
No, I think what we meant was, actually I think they mean the same thing, performed and documented. It just means, so it was performed and it's in the chart. I don't think it means reviewed, but it means documented, meaning it's in the chart. Currently it's not specified that the review has to be done. So if that wording is confusing, we are definitely open to changing it.
You might think of another word other than documentation.
That's been discussed also in our meetings, but that word is confusing, and we're in the process of removing it from many of our measures.
If I can ask maybe a related question of you, if a primary care physician or an endocrinologist, diabetologist, or cardiologist orders a lipid profile, and I don't, but I can still be aware of it, how would that be sort of scored in this measure, or, as is often the case, it may be an outside lab, not our lab at the hospital, that does it, and I have a PDF floating around somewhere in our electronic medical record?
That's an excellent question. So as long as you are aware that the patient had the test performed, then that patient meets the measure for you.
But you just said that you wouldn't, there's no way to document my awareness of the lab report.
Yes, but if you are going to report on this measure, then you have to know whether you're aware of it or not. Does that make sense?
So I would have to go through all of my charts to see whether I documented my awareness of somebody else's having obtained a lab.
So in a paper world, that would mean manual abstraction, yes. So someone would have to find that result somewhere in the patient's chart. In an EHR world, if you had either an interface into your EHR of lab results from somewhere else or a shared system between, say, different specialty offices and your primary care office or whoever you are as the doctor, as long as that result is accessible in your EHR, you're good to go. It gets more complicated if you start having access to outside systems where you'd need to go look at that. The integration is not necessarily there. Does that answer the question? Yeah. I mean, in the ideal world, the EHR, everyone would have an EHR, and you would be able to see that Dr. Smith looked at this and acted on it. But it's, yeah, thank you. Okay, so, you know, it's just not there yet, but hopefully someday.
I believe that concludes those remarks.
Did you learn something there you could share with us about feasibility? It's not as feasible as we'd like it to be.
We are moving forward.
Okay. Other issues related to feasibility? Questions, concerns? The reviewers were sort of had mixed opinions about the feasibility, as I guess the conversation demonstrated.
Okay.
So, I guess we're going to take a stab at it. So, feasibility, high, moderate, low, or insufficient?
Lorianne, feasibility?
Feasibility, moderate.
Results, 12 moderate, 8 low, 1 insufficient. So I think it does carry it moderate. So,
and overall.
So overall, did we pass it? I can't remember.
No.
I know. But of the four, we passed all of them, really. Okay, so let's vote overall. Yes, no, or abstain.
And Lorian, overall?
Yes.
Okay, 21 responses. And it looks like the ayes have it with 18, 3 no, And I think we've earned a bio break at this point, haven't we?
Yes, definitely.
Thank you. Thank you. Okay. Back in 10 minutes or so?
Yeah.
Lauren or Karen, this is Lorian. Can either of you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you.
Oh, I don't know if everyone needs to hear this. I just wanted to check in to see what the plans for this afternoon will be, since it looks like we're a little behind schedule. Will we go over tonight, or will we try and catch up tomorrow?
We were actually just getting ready to decide how we want to strategize for the rest of the day. Maybe just finish up cardio.
I think that would be reasonable. Two more. They take us to at least five. So.
Well, just 1 second, Lori. We're tight.
I don't know. I think we need, I think...
Well,
maybe we can
get
one in, one or two,
yeah.
Or at least 5:30. I mean, and then we'll
reduce so
the morning.
So rather set a number of measures, we'll set a time.
Yeah.
So.
5:45, that's the half hour longer. Can people do that, or do you think we just need to end at 5:30? People are already kind of at their max, so.
I don't know, we can pull it.
Hi. Hi. Nice to meet you finally. Sorry, you didn't mean to say hi earlier. Lorian, are you still there? Lorian?
Obviously, I think
That's a good idea. I used drinking all that free coffee here.
Maybe we can do 249 and 250 together. Maybe we, because there's only one little difference.
I got this because there were blackberries. It has some fruit on it.
Thank you.
Okay, I hate to say this, but let's get back to work, and let's do a time check. It is now getting very close to 4:30. We had hoped to end at 5, but we'd like to ask to extend your time a bit. 7. No, we're not thinking. Thank you. No, we're not going to be as drastic as Alan would if he was sitting here, because he wouldn't let you off till we finished the agenda. Huh? Oh, yeah. Well, how about 5:45? Is that reasonable? 45 extra minutes. I think we can get through a few more of these. Okay. All right. Well, thank you very much. Okay. The next metric then is my
1633.
You got my master listener. 1633. Blood pressure management. And Dr. Fenves is going to take us off on this one.
I hesitate a little bit after this. I'm new at this, and this is a thick one, but I'll do my best. No laughing allowed, I hope. It's like when I play golf, no laughing allowed. So this is a measure on blood pressure management. The steward is the American Medical Association, and it looks at the percentage of adult patients aged 18 years or older with a diagnosis of stage 3, 4, 5 CKD, but not receiving RRT, and albuminuria with a blood pressure either less than 130 over 80 or greater than 130 over 80 with a documented plan of care. Now, in terms of definitions, first, the albuminuria is defined as greater than 300 milligrams of albumin, not protein, albumin, for 24 hours. And the documented plan of care in those whose pressures are greater than 130 or 80 is recheck blood pressure within 90 days, initiate or alter pharmacologic therapy for blood pressure control, initiate or alter non-pharmacologic therapy such as lifestyle changes, documented review of patient's home blood pressure log, which indicates the blood pressure is not well controlled. So again, in this case, I already defined the numerator and the denominator. The denominator would be all patients aged 18 years or older with CKD 3, 4, or 5 not receiving any form of RRT and albuminuria as I defined it.
Okay, so let's go and start with impact 1A. Andrew, I don't know if you have any comments about that. It looks like the preliminary reviews were pretty much thinking it was moderate or high.
Right.
So
the impact is high in the sense that, first of all, hypertension is extremely prevalent, but in particular, I think the issue has to do with, as all of us clinicians know, especially in CKD patients, whether their CKD is due to hypertension or worsened or hypertension or have secondary hypertension after CKD. In either case, blood pressure control is so intensely important with respect to preventing progression towards worst stage and or end stage renal disease. So that certainly appears that the impact is significant in that respect.
So are there any, is there any discussion about impact, or can we go ahead and vote on that aspect?
Are you talking about the impact of blood pressure control or the impact of this lower target blood pressure?
We're talking about, in general, the impact of the topic of blood pressure control, and then we'll get into the evidence about the specific target. That, does that make sense? Okay. So 1A, impact?
Just for clarity, though, the numerator includes not only patients who have high blood pressure who obviously need something done, but also patients with meeting the goal but just have albuminuria present. And that could be patients, for instance, who used to have much higher albuminuria and with blood pressure control now it's much lower. That may be the best you can do in certain patients. So I'm not quite comfortable with, unless maybe someone can explain to me a little bit more about why the numerator is written in that way. What's the expectation that you're going to do for patients based on that? Alan?
But it looks like it means recording the blood pressure, making sure that it's recorded for people with normal blood pressure, and making sure there's a plan of action for people with high blood pressure.
And I think we should address that during when we talk about the measure specifications and how it relates to the evidence, because I think it is a question of, if you have either or, is it basically everyone going to be 100%? So, so that definitely needs to come up under specifications, if that's okay.
To clarify what I think I hear you saying too, is that, okay, so you're under control, your blood pressure is under control, you have proteinuria, so the plan of care is we check in 3 months. Yeah. Okay.
All right. 1A, impact, high, moderate, low, insufficient.
Lorian, are you still on the phone?
I am.
Okay. Thanks for hanging in there.
How's that baby doing?
Did I not say that enthusiastically? I'm rephrasing.
1A, impact, high, moderate, low, insufficient?
Impact, high.
Thank you.
Okay, we have 21. Okay, 20 high and 1 moderate. Very good. That's what I like to see. Okay, is there a performance gap? Andrew.
With respect to performance gap, on page 4, they're looking at some data, not that surprising, from 2008. If you look at optimal blood pressure, say 130 over 80, or say less than 130 over 80, substantial percentage of patients, like 43%, I think, did not meet that. I think we know that in clinical practice, these are patients with advanced kidney disease, often on multiple medications, or non-compliance compliance issues and the like, so that's not surprising. So there certainly appears to be a gap. And then they talk a little bit about ethnicity as well, in particular in the African-American population.
So again, just to clarify, this was from CRIC. These are data from CRIC showing these numbers that you just showed.
Yeah, correct.
Okay, more discussion from other members in the reviewing team? For anyone?
Okay, then let's go ahead and vote on performance gap.
Go ahead.
High, moderate, low, insufficient.
Lorian?
High.
Thank you.
All right, the voting was 14 high, 6 moderate. Now this is not a health outcome, right?
Right.
This is
intermediate clinical outcome.
So we need to look at the body of evidence.
All right, so Andrew, you want to talk about the quantity, quality, and consistency of the body
right.
of evidence?
So in the body of evidence section, to be honest, they do a lot of dancing around. But ultimately, if I'm correct, and they talk about review of the literature by the K-Doki group, a large group, which will come up again. But if I read this correctly, it's a number of indirect studies looking at blood pressure lowering, although I think in many of these studies the goals are variable. So it's not always 130 over 80, or there are some certain limitations. So the data is good, but this expert committee rated it as strong. Those are kind of my comments. Maybe others can comment.
I have a question. Are we talking about the quantity of studies that justify this lower target, or are we talking about the quantity of studies that justify blood pressure control to a higher target?
No, this evidence should be specifically to support the measure as
there are very, very few studies. There's very little evidence to support either improved cardiovascular outcomes or improved renal outcomes when you go to this lower threshold.
Again, specifically in the population that we're talking about here, Andy, of course, is right. There are no studies at these numbers. There are credible information for the general population at this lower level. But in our patients, I think that the evidence is not there.
Which is why I emphasize, I mentioned the word dancing and basically extrapolating from other populations and the expert panel and so forth.
The lower target in the general population, what are you thinking of?
The most recent HRV7 or whatever, I don't know what they call it, and I've reviewed those data. There are studies that are clearly suggestive that target is inappropriate, and the quantity and quality of those studies it would be reasonable to discuss, but it's a moot point for our patients because there are none for our patient population.
The only comment I would make is they did include proteinuria, I think, because they were worried about that, and we all know that, say, overt proteinuria, the way they defined it, would be a worse prognostic indicator, but again, I agree with the evidence would be indirect.
I saw the developers hopping up and down. Is this do you disagree with this conclusion?
Never hop up and down here. Andy, are you talking about folks with proteinuria as illustrated by the NUMA?
I mean, with or without proteinuria, the studies aren't there. And even, I mean, the K-Doki that you're talking about is 7 years old, and it's cited, you know, as the reference. But within that, a lot of, there's not the studies cited there. If you look at the K-Digo, which just came out, they make a similar recommendation, but it's 2C, or it's not a high grade. And making this a performance measure, a potential performance measure, I think requires very high grade evidence.
I would also suggest that JNC 8, I think, is going to be coming out sometime oh, JNC8 should be coming out relatively soon, I think. I don't know exactly when. It's, I think, is, from what I understand, we'll have very different numbers than this. So, or at least we, it may make sense to wait until we see what that expert panel responds.
But will that address our population particularly, or as a subgroup?
Well, actually, that's where I was yesterday and this morning, and I can't. I'd have to kill you.
You'd have to kill us.
it's a different process than the previous JNC processes, and I think that it's going to be very strictly evidence-based.
All right. Well,
and, you know, I don't know how interested this group is in harmonization, but it's going to be very strictly evidence-based.
Let me see if I understand you.
What can we read between the lines? Okay, so I think...
And when did you say that's coming out?
November is what...
I think there are a lot of people very impatiently waiting. What I heard is that the American Heart Association meeting they're going to, which is in November. But it's been deferred a few times, so...
Okay, so are we ready to vote? Okay, first on the quantity of studies in the body of evidence. Quantity, not quality. High, moderate, low, insufficient.
Florian, quantity?
High.
Okay. A large spread. If you move a couple from 1 to 3, it would be like even. Okay, we have 8 voting high, 4 moderate, 2 low, and 4 insufficient. I'm sorry, 6 voted insufficient. 8 high, 4 moderate, 2 low, 6 insufficient. Thank you. Next on the quality of the body of evidence, high, moderate, low, insufficient evidence.
Go ahead. And Loria?
Moderate.
So 7 moderate, 3 low, 10 insufficient. And let's vote also on consistency. High, moderate, low, or insufficient evidence.
Gloria?
For consistency, low.
Thank you.
All right, 7 moderate, 6 low, 8 insufficient. So applying our grid, where do we get?
So you want to go to? So basically we have inconsistent because it's either low or insufficient on that rating plus
low quality. So that would give us a no, I think, the bottom row.
Right.
So do we need to vote on the next question, which is the total importance?
No, we don't vote on that because it won't pass if it didn't pass the evidence.
Okay. So shall we stop here?
Yep.
Yep. Okay. Good. All right. So let's go on to angiotensin converting enzyme inhibitor, or ARB, therapy. And
can I make a comment about the last one?
You may.
And it's probably a follow-up of Dr. Narva's comment and timing of this report. You may have noticed I was listed as one of the people in that work group from many years ago, and you learn things with time, including more evidence and better look at the evidence. If there are two bodies that are going to be comment upon this subject, hypertension and people with kidney disease, both of which are about to come out with recommendations in the next several months, I would somehow encourage a resubmission, because this is a high impact question, but in order to not just simply harmonize with other groups, but also let this group actually look at the true evidence that's presented by the measured steward, that hopefully will be marshaled in such a way so as to make for a measure that would indeed be as correct as possible in today's evidence, and hopefully harmonize with other national and international groups. And hopefully the proverbial minutes could recognize that and encourage a resubmission, because it is a truly very important issue.
Is there could it come into a different set of metrics?
Well, I know that we actually have a cardiovascular project that was going on prior to this project, and I know that that project had some blood pressure measures, and I know there was, and I wasn't intimately involved there, and maybe tomorrow we can get some information for you, because I know that they were looking at blood pressure levels in general for the more general population, and I know there was discussion about the JNC8 coming out and where that was going to land. But I'll see if I can get some information to present to you. So I guess I'm not sure when the next opportunity would be, but certainly, we do have some ad hoc review processes. It's just that it's hard to keep doing ad hoc reviews. So we would just definitely have to take a look at that, where we could fit that in. But I hear what you're saying, and obviously it would seem out of sync to come out with a performance measure based on some level that is then not supported by the major group that's reviewing the evidence. So we definitely would want things to be in sync there. Okay,
1662.
And that was Andrew. 1662, same steward, the American AMA, looking at percentage of patients aged 18 years or older with a diagnosis of CKD. I take this to be all CKD stages 1 through 5, but not receiving RRT. And albuminuria, or were defined just like in the previous one, greater than 300 milligrams of albumin per 24 hours, who were prescribed either an ACE inhibitor or ARB therapy within a 12-month period. Again, that would be the numerator. The denominator would be all of them, basically everybody aged 18 years or older who have CKD, not receiving RRT and have albuminuria. So again, I guess looking at the percentage of patients receiving either an ARB or an ACE in that, defined in that category. All comers, not just diabetic.
Okay, any comments about impact? Can we go, any issues about that, or can we have a review of that? All right, why don't we go ahead and vote on impact, and then we'll get on to opportunity for improvement. Okay, 1A impact, high, moderate, low, insufficient. Go ahead and start it.
And Lorianne, impact?
Impact, moderate.
Thank you.
line. Okay, the voting was 13 high, 7 moderate.
Even the program is getting tired.
Okay, is there data supporting that there's a performance gap? Andrew.
On page 3, there appears to be a gap. They, let's see, where did I lost it now, but they quote,
data from 2008.
Yeah, they quote data from 08.
On dialysis patients.
But it's on dialysis patients. It actually doesn't include this group. Because that's been excluded here.
Okay. So is the committee aware of other information about performance gap for the broader population of this measure? I mean, are there...
Here again, we have an issue of heterogeneity here. This is virtually everybody in the world who has albumin, more 300 milligrams of albumin or more for 24 hours, regardless of their age, race, serum creatinine level, life expectancy to some extent. So it's a very broad group, and their performance measure data only vaguely relates to ESRD as far as I can tell.
Right. Well, again, just to this specific question of a performance gap to non-dialysis CKD patients, the data that is cited is the USRDS dialysis population. So there is no evidence we've been presented on a performance gap. None.
Can we clarify with the stewards about the statement there is a gap in care shown by the 2008 data, 44.9% of patients did not receive the optimal care. That did not receive an ACE or ARB and had albuminuria.
Right. Can you clarify, is that in dialysis patients or is that in the target population here? Say that in the microphone, please.
That data is presented for this specific measure as used in PQRI.
Yeah, I think it's just confusing the way it's laid out because the dialysis and transplant patients is right above, but then they do say this measure.
There should be a line in between those two lines, yes. They're separate.
So what's the data source for the non-dialysis CKD performance gap?
PQRI. Claims data. Oh, 10th percentile is 11% and 90th percentile is 100%.
That was
spent about 2 years.
Where did this
come from? So that data is 3 years old, I guess, and I'd want to make sure it spanned the entire spectrum of CKD at that albumin level.
What's that?
The data is 3 years or are 3 years old, and I'd want to make sure that it applies to this entire patient population, not only a segment of the patient population, that is everybody with an albumin level of 300 and above, and then you get into issues of whether it's appropriate to have all of those patients on an ACE or ARB.
Well, I think it was this actual measure, so it's the entire, you know, again, we can argue whether or not that's the appropriate thing, but it was the entire spectrum of CKD patients in this data.
Yeah, there's two different references.
Can you clarify this for us?
Yeah, there's two different references. One is the CKD data from USRDS that I can't tell you whether it was broken down by proteinuria. But it was the CKD population there. The second one is the PQRS data itself is being, you know, is what's being referred to here. So it was a group with, and that's in that table that's there with the breakout. you can see 40.9% of it reported did not receive the optimal care. That's in those who folks reported from PQRS.
Okay.
But I can't tell you about the USRDS database.
So let me, for those of us who weren't, don't know these various databases and their nicknames, can we now, have we been assured that this 44.9% of patients reported on did not receive the optimal care? That is in, that is applying this metric to the target population as described in the denominator. Is that true now?
Yes.
Okay.
But the USRDS database, I can tell you whether those are people that were only proteinuric at that level.
Right. So USRDS doesn't mean ESRD in this case. This is...
And ESRD is published there.
Okay, so that issue's been clarified. Okay.
Microphone.
I think, isn't the data in the USRDS describe people who are hypertensive with diabetes and CKD?
Not exclusively, from what I understand, the research that I did, there's all different kinds of patients. It's a chronic kidney disease. With chronic kidney disease, there's all kinds of stats, and then with ESRD.
Are you okay?
I think so, yeah.
All right. So, are we ready to vote on the performance gap? High, moderate, low, insufficient. Ready? Okay.
And Lorian, performance gap?
Moderate.
Is 19 appropriate number now? 4, 6, 8, 10.
Thanks, everybody. Looks like everybody's done.
Okay.
Oh.
All right, another blend. So we have one under high, two votes, moderate, 14, is that what you see? Okay. And low, two, insufficient, two. Okay, so let's go to the quality of the evidence. For the body of evidence.
So the quality, again, to me, the key issue here had to do with the problem that ACEs and ARBs are used in different studies. So as we know, ACEs are... So first of all, some of these patients don't have diabetes. The data is very good in diabetic patients, the use of ACEs and ARBs. I think that's fully accepted, although, as a reminder, there's better evidence for ARBs in type 2, better evidence for ACEs in type 1 diabetes. Now, the issue is to put this in the context of just regular CKD without diabetes and proteinuria. And there... there are smaller studies, but there are, again, they go back to that work group that I talked about earlier, the same group from many years ago, KDOKI, looking at a large number of smaller studies showing improvement, again, in proteinuric CKD patients with respect to at least progression. So, that group rated the evidence as strong. Those were my comments, or grade A.
And this is Lori, and one part that was difficult for me in regards to being the evidence based on what was presented is at least most of the studies I'm aware of in diabetes, there are few in normotensive patients. The vast majority are in hypertensive patients. And it wasn't clear based on what's presented if these studies actually require hypertension in addition to albuminuria to receive treatment with an ACE. since the measure does not require hypertension.
Well, that's right. This metric doesn't call for hypertension in them.
That's true. If I may make a comment about that, as somebody having been involved in a study where we're looking at patients with significant proteinuria and some degree of CKD who have no hypertension, those are very hard to find. I'll bet. That is not to say that it doesn't exist, but it's a low number.
In Ed Lewis's captopril trial in type 1 diabetics, there were 409 patients, and about 96 of those did not have hypertension, so roughly a quarter. And they had quantitatively, qualitatively, the same outcome, the same renal protection as those people who had hypertension. And if you had kidney disease, in essence, the higher the creatinine, the more bang for your buck you got with an ACE inhibitor. But hypertension did not discriminate. The presence or absence did not discriminate results. So I don't know IDNT and RENAL data that well along that question.
There have been studies looking at the normotensive diabetic, but I just wanted to make that comment. It's sometimes hard to comment on the quantity studies that are directly applicable to this measure, as the vast majority out there, I think, include a predominantly hypertensive population.
Right. A lot of the diabetics' microalbuminuria stuff, the hypertension was not a requirement.
So my understanding, and I'm not sure if this is what Lorian is saying, the evidence is pretty strong for normotensive diabetics with more than 300 milligrams of albuminuria. It's not so good for people with diabetics who are with less than that, but it's very good for diabetics who are hypertensive or diabetics who are normotensive but have more than 300 milligrams. There's not a huge amount of data on people who are normotensive and non-diabetic who have, 300 milligrams of albuminuria, although I'm sure most of us would look for some reason to put somebody on a RAS inhibitor. But
you'd have to go back and look at the study demographics of the RAIN trial and the OPRI trial, but I think you're right. I think most of those people have high blood pressure that got into those trials.
And my recollection also is that most of the benefit has not been convincingly demonstrated below about 500 of proteinuria. I mean, most of that's albuminuria, but the 300 is, I'm not sure exactly where that number, what the data are to support 300 as opposed to some different number.
Yeah, I don't know. And then the other question that is a corollary to that, they say 300 milligrams proteinuria daily, which infers you've collected a 24-hour urine and have that number. Was there any potential surrogate markers like a protein creatinine ratio or albumin creatinine ratio, or does it require a 24-hour urine? Because if the requirement is 24-hour urinary albumin excretion, you're going to have a surprisingly small number of people that get that.
Well, it's a question because at least provided to us. There's a lot of different ways trying to ascertain albumin in the urine, and actually diagnoses that aren't very specific are one of the ways to get counted, denominator. There are some, I think, clarifications needed on the specific measure.
Can you clarify?
Oh, you want to do that now?
No, I'm going to ask the measure developer to clarify.
This is another case where we've continued working on the measures through public comment, and in later versions of our measures, we have a different definition for proteinuria that we would be happy to apply to this measure as well. And we just have it as proteinuria defined as more than 300 milligrams of albumin in the urine over 24 hours, or number two, ACR more than 300. I can't read those. Can you read those?
Micrograms per milligram of creatinine.
Or 3 protein to creatinine ratio more than 0.3.
Okay, that sounds like a good improvement. Okay, so are we ready to vote on the quantity? Let's studies and the body of evidence? Okay. High, moderate, low, or insufficient?
And Lorian? Quantity?
Quantity. I have moderate.
Okay.
We have one voting high, looks like 19, moderate, and one insufficient. Okay, now quality. Are we ready? Okay. Quality of body of evidence.
Lorian?
Moderate.
Okay. Looks like one high, 18 moderate, one low, one insufficient. And consistency.
Lorian?
Moderate.
Okay, same as last. One high, 18 moderate, one low, one insufficient.
That's a 17.
That's a 17?
Yeah, 17 moderate.
One, 17, one, and one. So I think we're okay here. We have a moderate or high for each of the three.
Mm-hmm. And we're okay on importance. Impact and
gap.
And gap. So we can move on to reliability.
Okay, Andrew?
On the reliability, I think I'm supposed to comment on the group of patients, the data sample, which I wonder if it's the same as before. It's looking at the data that they looked at. Am I right? It's the same. So, but I can go. So again, it's four.
So the preliminary reviewers had mixed reviews about reliability, so a couple moderate to high and a couple low, so maybe we need to hear about the concerns on the low ratings about reliability.
This is Lorian. I was one of the lows, so this is why I rated it as low. It was largely in part due to the patient, similar issues to the past where the attached appendix, a lot of the laboratory tests are not urinary albumin studies. There are things like pre-albumin, calcium for albumin. This is all on page 2, I believe. I don't know if you guys have that up. But it's just to show that the denominator is currently including a lot of laboratory tests be relevant or appropriate. And then I was also concerned about some of the diagnoses used for the denominator, including orthostatic proteinuria or dotted proteinuria, microalbumin positive, which is not the focus of the measure since it requires macroalbuminuria. As currently specified, these patients would all be put into the denominator appropriately with those diagnoses. Now, you could argue accidentally pulling serum labs should be okay because you shouldn't have a value that consists with the definition. And there was extensive of pregnancy codes. I think that was about 100 or so pages were pregnancy codes, some of which were postpartum conditions, so to determine how many of those would really reflect, but I think that's a small number. And then last was something we already discussed, which is what were we going to do about urine testing or time collection, opposed to just 24-hour urine collection. So those were the things I was hoping to get on from the or the same approach we used in the past, which is to divorce from the EHR now.
Okay, so it sounds like you've identified some additional issues about those e-specifications, and if it's the will of the group, we can proceed the way we did before of proceed with the measure, excluding the e-specifications, and ask those to come back to us with some clarification and crosswalk to make sure that they do indeed reflect the measure as it's specified, unless the developer has any clarifications they can provide right now. Okay. Other comments about reliability?
This is the same sample used for other measures, I presume. Question for the developers. This is, again, inter-patient reliability. In other words, more than one evaluator looking at the same chart and coming up with the same data. Okay.
Okay.
That this measure, like the others, will be implemented in different ways depending on implementing it. So some will be charged versus electronic versus CPC code.
That's what they're saying, yes.
Do we have any data on the reliability of the CPC 2 code for this measure?
Let's see if it's, I don't know if it was provided in 2A2. 2A2 we need to look at for. Don't believe this has anything about CPT-2 codes.
The measure hadn't been implemented in PQRI when we did the testing, so.
Okay. So, but you're still specifying it with CPT-2 codes?
Yes.
Go ahead. In terms of the reliability on the denominator exclusions, it talks about the documentation of patient reasons for not prescribing the ACE or ARBs, such as patient declined and other patient reasons. And in terms of specifications and the reliability of extracting that data, I have a question about that. And the reliability of them being able to extract it and remove it from the denominator. And maybe that's
do you want to ask the developers how they handle that?
How are you handling that? The exclusions from the denominators?
That's a great question. I have a list of the verbatim documentation reasons for exclusion. Is that what you're interested in?
Just the reliability of being able to get reproducible exclusion data either through the electronic medical record or hand extraction, and if it is going to be reliable.
Let me check here. For this measure, the exclusion rate that we found using the specified exclusions in the measure was 18%, and there was 13 discrete verbatim documentation reasons for exclusion, which were reviewed by the work group, and none were found to be in inappropriate reasons for exclusion.
Okay.
But that relies on somebody doing a hard copy review, and since one out of five people are being excluded for that reason, that that may become an issue if you try to translate this into an EHR.
Right.
And my understanding is there are CPT-2 code modifiers that you're going to use to identify exclusion as well. But those are really at the will of the physician, right? You're trusting that they're telling you they were excluded for the reasons you think. Right? Do I understand that correctly with the CPT-2 modifiers?
Yes.
Yes, the developer is saying yes. So basically the approach to the exceptions for this measure and the other measures is these broad categories that sometimes give examples that are basically individual physician defined in terms of whether the physician thinks they should exclude the patient based on a medical reason, patient reason. And so it's a question that in this particular measure, we actually have some data. It's under validity, which is 2B3.2 that I think Joe mentioned. So that's on page 22 of the submission. And they said the exception rate was 18%. So that means 18% of the patients were ended up being excluded for, and then they gave some...
I appreciate and understand that. My point is that somebody with a vested interest in doing this correctly reviewed the medical record with great intensity to come up with that. My personal medical record has failed to document my ACE cough for 9 years now. And I can guarantee you, my friendly bumpkin that hadn't put that in the chart, hasn't developed a CPT code that I never heard of. To say that, you know, we excluded that on the basis of joint stupidity, or, I mean, my concern is, should this be implemented broadly, it's going to be difficult to document in the medical record what I consider to be a significant minority of exclusions in the 18 to 20% range.
Can I raise another concern with the exclusions, and that is, as I read through these, if this is going to be done in a primary care doctor's office, an internist or family doctor, is that many of these reasons for not putting it patients on an ACE inhibitor or an ARB is exactly the reason they should be on an ACE inhibitor or ARB. So there's going to be a problem, I think, in making sure that this doesn't, that this actually translates into quality.
I have another point for clarification. In the exclusion, they talk about patient decline. So, but the numerator is patients who are prescribed ACE or ARBs. So if a patient declines to take them, do you still include the fact that the physician prescribed it in the numerator and then exclude that patient out of the denominator because they refused to take it? I think clarification for that, please, maybe to the developers.
I'm sorry, can't hear you.
We could get you how that was handled, but we don't have that answer at this moment.
Okay, so we've been kind of talking about both reliability and some validity issues, primarily around the exceptions with the validity issues. Should this measure go forward, it's also going to have to be harmonized with, there are other NQF measures about ACE and ARBs, and many of those don't have those kind of open exceptions, but I think it's important for you to weigh in on that, you know, in terms of what impact that might have, if you think that has on the validity of this measure being able to accurately reflect quality of care consistently across all providers. So I think that's part of the question that's on the table. And then the other question is, you know, if you accept that these can be individually identified by each physician, will it actually be available in the records that will eventually be used to extract these? So, and maybe there are some other questions.
I think that's a good summary. Did you have a...
Yeah, so to answer the question about the exception for the patient refusing the prescription, the way the measure is calculated is if the patient meets the numerator, an exception is not looked for. So if the prescription was given to the patient and then the patient would meet the measure, they would have to have refused taking the prescription from the physician to be an exception. Does that answer the question?
So, yeah, we can vote on, when you're ready, we'll vote on reliability and validity. You know, this might be an area where you could make recommendations about modifying the measure if that turned out to be a concern in terms of the measure going forward, if there is, you know, reliability or validity concerns about that. Other discussion about exceptions or other issues about reliability and validity?
Okay, then let's vote.
Okay, so we'll start with reliability, 2A.
And Lorian, reliability?
Reliability low.
Results are, is that 7 moderate?
Yeah.
11 low, 3 insufficient evidence. So it comes out low.
Yeah, it comes out low. Okay.
Okay, validity. Further discussion on this? This was also face validity?
Yeah,
we haven't talked about that.
Face validity. And then the other aspect that affects this, as we talked about, are you, any concerns about the exclusions or exceptions.
Mm-hmm. Okay, are we ready to vote on this? Okay, 2B, validity, high, moderate, low, or insufficient evidence.
Gloria?
Low.
Again, we have 7 moderate, I believe, 12 low, 1 insufficient. So it may be then that we...
That would not pass scientific
right.
acceptability. So that would stop there.
It's a very complex metric, that's for sure.
Okay, so it's already 5:30.
Yeah, I don't know about you, but I'm reluctant to jump into another
right.
one
and
a
we
whole
also,
new category.
We also need to have the measure developers do a brief introduction to those measures. So,
if we were to do that, and we still need to have another public comment period before we end.
Why don't we do the public comment? Maybe we'll have then with the committee just a brief debrief to get some ideas if there's something we could do to move faster tomorrow, and then we'll start with tomorrow. We'll continue on tomorrow. We do have to start with the mortality measure in the morning because our statistical consultant is only going to be available from 8:15 to 9. So we'll have to do that at least first thing in the morning, and then we'll probably resume with the dialysis adequacy measures. So,
okay.
Let's do public comment, and then.
Okay, the floor is open for public comment and developer comment. In the back.
Hi, Lisa McGonigal from KCP. We again thank you for the opportunity to comment on the measures. We'd like to use this afternoon period to comment on the mineral metabolism, patient education, quality of life measures in advance of your discussion tomorrow. So for the mineral metabolism, KCP previously supported measures 255, 261, which are measurement of serum phosphorus and calcium, respectively. But a review of evidence supplied by KCP members indicates that these measures are topped out with performance rates on average of about 97% and up, regardless of dialysis organization type. As such, KCP recommends that these two measures be placed in NQF reserve status. KCP continues to oppose measures 0570, 571, 574, CKD monitoring of phosphorus, PTH, and calcium, respectively, because the measures are not harmonized with the corresponding PQRI measure and are less rigorous than the testing recommendations in the KDOQI bone and mineral guidelines. KCP supports the following measures for public recording only. Measure 1655, ESRD patients with PTH greater than 400 and not treated with a calcimimetric and or vitamin D analog, and 1658, patients with PTH less than 130 and continued treatment with calcimimetic or vitamin D analog. With the patient education and quality of life measures, KCP continues to support the following measures for reporting purposes only. Measure 0320, patient education awareness physician level, 324, patient education awareness facility level, and 0260, assessment of health related quality of life in dialysis patients. Thank you.
Okay. Other comments? Okay, thank you. So,
if we could just, if the committee would just bear with us for just a few more minutes, and we'd like to just see if you want, if you can make any comments about our process, or if you have any suggestions, we'll be kind of thinking about if we need to, what we can tweak a little bit for tomorrow. I think part of this is just, there's a lot to these measures, and it takes a while to get through these, and we will, get as far as we can get and work with you through electronic communication and conference call. But if you'd like to express any comments, frustrations, suggestions, we're all ears.
Alan first.
Yeah. this has only been slightly less painful than the dentist. It really is wonderful because it really is having us all pay attention, and there's been wonderful comments. So my suggestion would be this. Karen, I spoke to you earlier today. Your comments in pre-examining these measures were frequently excellent, right on the point, making very pertinent concerns and observations about these. And what I wonder if it might not help us is in the technical aspects of these measures, like validity, reliability, feasibility, if we could perhaps get a recommendation from you based on your review of these criteria as a starting point for our discussions. I think it might make the discussions more focused and perhaps a little more streamlined.
I appreciate your comments that you found those helpful. it's not part of our process to have staff start with a recommendation. You know, we do try to do some preliminary review and identify issues and questions that we present both to you and back to the measure developers. So I think we wouldn't be able to do that tomorrow, but it's certainly something that, you know, I'll discuss at higher levels at MQF. I appreciate that comment.
Just a quick rejoinder to that, which is that there are clearly parts of this that you shouldn't be doing. There are parts that have to do with our assessment of the importance, our assessment, you know, final assessments, et cetera. But I'm really suggesting picking out those technical pieces that we spent a lot of time scratching our head about here, where we could get a head start on that discussion with your observations.
All right.
Jeffrey.
Two comments. One is related to Alan's. I wonder whether it would be worth looking at how the four or five people who did the measure review, if they, with some degree of unanimity, agreed that it didn't pass muster, could it just simply not come to this committee? It might be worth going back and looking retrospectively at how successful that approach would have been. We may be able to eliminate going through all of these in some detail.
Are you saying based on the preliminary evals if it didn't pass muster?
Yeah, so three of the four said,
right.
you know,
maybe they don't need to come.
Maybe it doesn't need to come here.
Right.
Or maybe the chair could handle it or something.
Right. Yeah. Well, I think that's one of the things.
or Joe.
I appreciate that. And maybe, you know, one of the things we were talking about with staff is that, you know, those preliminary reviews are valuable in terms of kind of identifying where the issues are. So maybe that is one way to at least start, you know, identify those that perhaps looks like they don't pass muster, but certainly open it up to make sure that there's agreement there versus that's kind of moving too quickly.
Maybe likewise in that same vein, going through each of the various elements, if the preliminary reviewers have high agreement, everybody's high, we just, you know, ask if anybody has any issues and then go past it.
Yeah.
Right. Rather than, so help me play that out. So rather just use those ratings unless someone had a disagreement and not have to have the whole committee.
Where there's high agreement, maybe on the positive, maybe in the interest of giving the reviewers a fair review for the measure. If there was a negative, we go through it as a committee. But where it's yes, this was all valid, yes, this was high agreement, yes, it's consistent, we move past it.
And the presenter could be responsible for pointing that out more clearly. I would favor maybe a format where instead of style, at least I have to put this out for consideration. Here's the metric. This is the presenter now. Here's the numerator, denominator, or in a sense what the metric was. In general, we found that this seemed to have high impact. They couldn't show us a performance gap, however, and we thought the body of evidence was okay, you know, and just kind of tick, tick, tick kind of down, say this is where we all had agreement and this is where we had some issues. And it might keep things a little more together. It feels kind of disjointed. We just kind of jump right into one thing and you haven't really. So that's a thought.
With the
part of the concern here is, you know, what's coming out of an inverted airplane. And if the presentation has to be that representative and precise and fair, one should have adequate time for that preparation.
Yeah, particularly knowing what your review mates thought, because you don't get that until
right.
Very late.
Although that's not NQF's problem, that's this review.
Well, and just to clarify, what we sent you yesterday was the latest update, which was about 7 more reviews. But definitely we understand. So I'm not saying, you know, we'll kind of regroup here and talk about, we don't want to upset the process or not give things a fair hearing given what we started with, but just wanted to get some thoughts and we'll see if we can move things along tomorrow and we'll get as far as we can. And, you know, if you think, yes, Jim.
I think Lorian deserves. I think Lorian deserves the real measure, the real
right.
Award for being on the phone all day.
Lorian, are you still with us, or did you?
I'm still here.
All right. Well, I think
Lorian, can you tell us exactly what type of mojito you've been drinking?
Okay, well, let's adjourn for the evening.
Leave these on the desk, right?
Please leave your voting remotes at your seat, as well as any flash drive that we've given you today. We have dinner reservations for you at 6 p.m. at M&S Grill. It's on the corner of 13th and G's, so one block up and one block over.
Which grill?
M&S Grill. M&S Grill on the corner of 13th and 615, I'm sorry. So if you walk out of the hotel, it's, you hang a left, one block up. We are on 12th and F.
Right. Do you want, are you going there?
Yeah. So if you want to meet
in the lobby at 6 o'clock, mm-hmm. maybe?
Okay.
How about?
So yeah, you can head over now and.
She's saying that she needs a little more time. So
thanks,
how about,
Lisa.
How about meet in the lobby about 5 after 6? And if you want to come on your own after that, you can ask at the concierge. They'll know where the M&S Grill is. It's at the corner of 13th and F.
What time are we meeting tomorrow? Is it still the same schedule? Meet here at 7:30?
Yeah. We'll have to end on time because of...
That's what I wanted to ask. So are we meeting early?
Let me ask, does anyone need to leave here before 3:15?
I got to be on my way out the door at 3:15.
Okay, yeah. So we will end at 3:15. Continental Breakfast will be here at 7:30, and we'll start at 8 o'clock sharp.
Can we leave papers down here and stuff, or no?
Pardon me, can we leave papers here, or will they come? Can they leave things in here?
Yeah, can we leave papers in
still afternoon, I can still call some patients.
Just go ahead and leave it.